tracking template, which has got all the dates and tabs for this day, the portfolio committee is resolved on this. If you don't have it, we'll resend it directly to you. I'll ask my colleague if you can do that, because it's also our checklist to say the decisions that we have, recommendations that we would have made also, and also have gone through the house in terms of legal processes, that also they tend to be legally binding to your good staff, that you are paying attention to those issues that you are raising, other than the routine workings of the departments and also the SA and NYDA as it were. But also what would love you, if possible, without also being economical in terms of the highlights and average, is that please, if possible, all of us, we must focus on the areas that we underscore, also to give us a sense of comfort. And I think if you can approach it that way, we could be happy. With that, as a very long opening remarks, you are mostly welcome. A team of three, if I say three, NYDA, SSA, and DPME, not in terms of four bodies. But in the absence of the minister, I must say up front that in terms of the program, we've dealt with the apologies in the morning, and apologies of DM and the minister have been recorded accordingly and accepted by the committee. I will allow you, DG, if there's anything in the absence of the minister, not to deal with the report, but to give us an overall helicopter view. And of course, because the status is a standalone vote, you leave that one. If there's something between our NYDA and your good self, at a helicopter one, although the person that will be starting presenting is NYDA, just so that you cover any other things that you thought that probably the minister would have covered as an introduction. As a matter of consistency, because that's what we have been doing also with DPSA before that, sufficient general mirror.
Sure. I just wanted us to formally record the apologies of the statistician general as well. He is currently outside the country. Thank you, Chair.
Sincere apology, even in the morning, I missed that one, I was informed. Thanks for raising it. Much appreciated. DG, over to you, ma'am. DG, Honorable Doc. No, okay. DG, you may proceed, ma'am.
The Honourable Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, the Honourable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service Administration, Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. Melosoma, thank you very much for the opportunity. On behalf of the DPME family, which includes DPME and NYDA, we'd like to thank you for the opportunity to allow us to present to you the annual reports of the two organizations, which annual reports have been tabled formally in Parliament and reflect progress in our respective areas. Honorable Chairperson, the year under review reflected as financial year 2016-2017. From both the perspective of the two organizations, reflect a successful year in terms of the achievements of the targets. As they will confirm, NYDA was able in the year under review to reflect a 100% achievement of the targets that they have set. We note that we would be giving you reports about further work to be done in the following financial year, which includes the matter of the legislation and the expansion of the program for our youth in the country. And as the colleagues give their presentation, they will be able to clearly reflect that we all are concerned about this particular area receiving a higher priority in order for them to be able to address the challenges that we face as a society. the important issue, though, being finalization of the framework, the legislation, in order to be able to expand the program for youth development and empowerment in our country. With respect to planning, monitoring, and evaluation, in the 2016-2017 financial year, we also reflect good progress. Out of all the targets, about 62, only 9 have been partially achieved and not achieved. In that particular report, we'll deal with those details, but I am happy to indicate that for both entities, we present to you a clean audit for the 5th consecutive time for DPME and the 3rd consecutive time for NYDA. Would be able to outline the achievements of the year and focus, as you've requested, Chairperson, on the areas where those targets have not been met, and outline for the benefit of the committee actions and corrective measures that will be taken in order to ensure that those matters are dealt with and addressed adequately. Chairperson, would also note that the Auditor General's reports were incorporated into our annual reports, and they are true reflection as they were presented to us, as you have received a report from the Auditor General this morning. We thank you very much and look forward to very productive engagements with your Honourable Self, Chairperson, and the Honourable Members in this portfolio committee. I thank you.
Thank you so much, DG. That will bring us to NYDA. We have noted the apologies of the board chair and deputy earlier on in this morning. CEO, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon, Honorable Members, DG, and colleagues present here. Because the Chair, the Deputy Chair, are not here, I will take the role of attempting to engage with Honorable Members on the politics of youth development, and allow the CFO to take us through the presentation, and then I will then come back to assist in dealing with the questions and clarity that might arise. I think where I'm seated, I would want to pick it up where the DG has left it off, insofar as the report of the agency is concerned. We are presenting a third successive clean audit as the NYDA, but importantly, we are also presenting the 100% of the achievement of the KPIs that we had set for ourselves, given the resource allocation that we receive from government, as it were, and that which we attempt to raise with the private sector, civil society, as well as the public sector. And in that, one would want to engage with the Honourable Members of Parliament to make a case for better funding and increased funding for youth development. And allow me, Chair, to reflect a bit on the history that our previous engagements with National Treasury, insofar as the funding of the agency is concerned, has always been constrained and clouded, so to speak, by the not so rosy past of the organization, the NYDA. Issues like the so-called Kissing Festival and many other things have been the reason and the basis for why the funding couldn't decrease. And I think when the CFO presents here, when he deals with issues of finances, he will reflect that in the last 3 years, the agency has actually been receiving reduced funding from National Treasury, which we think does not speak to the challenges that we face as a country. We are a youthful nation. Our colleagues here from STATESA would support us when we say that we will remain a youthful nation for many years to come. And therefore, it makes sense to invest a little bit more to youth development. And basically what I'm trying to say here, Chair, is that I think the 3 years of successive clean audits the 3 years of better and high performance, which is reflected by 93% achievement of KPIs, 96% achievement of KPIs in the last 2 years, and 100% achievement of KPIs this year, suggests that the agency has repositioned. It is a suitable vehicle through which investment in youth development can be made through. And we want to make a case, Chair and Honorable Members, that as parliamentarians, as you deliberate policies and legislations and resource allocations and basically the direction of where our country must take, we think that the question of youth development must be at the center stage. And we think that also the agency as a vehicle for investment in youth development must be able to find that space of being considered for better resource allocation. And we will also make this case, Chair and Honorable Members, because by and large, in the last 3 years or so, you have raised certain issues to us, which, by the way, we agree with. The lack of presence in rural and peri-urban areas, we agree with you that our presence is not sufficient, but we are still saying that we are not capacitated to be able to be present where young people are. We have attempted, we have done our best, we have restructured the organization, we have saved and reduced our salary bill from over just about 209 million to about 144 million. We have redirected the limited resources to direct youth development projects. We have saved about 9 million, which we're saving per annum, by moving from the old head office to a much more smaller head office in trying to redirect and stretch the limited rent. But we're saying that where we are, we think that we have stretched as far as we can, whereas the cry and the demand for intervention by young people continue to increase on a daily basis. And we want to make this case that says that we have done, we think, what is expected of us to can be trusted to be that vehicle that advances development. We want to make that case. I will now hand over to the CFO to go into the details of the performance of the year that has been 2016-2017, and then we'll then engage moving forward. Thank you, Chair.
Before that, CFO, I'm sorry to be very clumsy on this one. Welcome, Honorable Dennis. We did receive your apology. Having said that, Honorable Members, and I'm sure you'll agree if I say on behalf of the Portfolio Committee, yes, to say that we'd like to pass our sincere condolences for your loss as the DA, one of your members. And I meant to bridge earlier on all the time. I had other things in my mind, but I thought that let me just use this opportunity still fresh in my mind. We are fully aware that the House will be debating the normal routine, but by that time it will be like more than 2 weeks. So it does make sense, but also taking into account the working relationship that we have enjoyed from the part of the furniture, Honorable Mutau and the other members that have joined us, and but as human also, it's very important that also each one's pain also is a pain to us because we are human beings. To lose somebody that you have been working with for years, it does make something to your emotions as well. But rest assured that we are also with you in your pain. And please pass our sincere condolences on behalf of the committee to the family if it's reachable within your reach as well. I'm not sure whether any other member does it, Dondela? Covered. That's covered, yes. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Honorable Members. Over to you, CFO.
Okay, thank you very much, Chairperson. Honorable Members, DG of DPME. It's a privilege for NYDA to present its annual report for the 2016-17 financial year. Chairperson, I'll not speak too much about the vision, the mission, the values of the NYDA. I think those matters are quite are well known to the committee members. So we'll separate the presentation into four separate elements. We'll start off with the performance of the organization, We'll touch on the financial matters for the year under review. We'll reflect on the human resources information. And towards the end, we will look forward to the financial year that we are in now and the priorities for the agency for 2017-2018. If we look at the performance of the agency in KPA number one, economic participation, this, our strategic objective there, is to enhance the participation of young people in the economy. The first KPI speaks to the number of youth-owned enterprises and youth receiving NYDA grant funding. There, our target was 629 youth-owned enterprises. We achieved a target of 698 youth-owned enterprises. In that KPI, we further assist young people, those aspiring and established entrepreneurs. We support them through business development services, such as our entrepreneurship development program, training programs, such as our market linkages program, such as our business development voucher service program. In there, we aim to achieve a target of 56,000 rand, 56,000 young people. We achieved a target of 63,400 young people. We exceeded the target due to a partnership that we formed with the Prime Stars Group, whereby we could extend the training offering that we offer to young people. Furthermore, we support community development projects through our grant funding program. These are bigger type grants looking at sectors that are generally underfunded. In there, we aim to support 9 communities. We managed to achieve 10 communities. We really measure impact on the economic participation program, Chair, through our jobs created and our jobs sustained. So we look at jobs created through funding that we provide to young entrepreneurs through our other business development services. But furthermore, we look forward and we try and measure into the future whether our programs and our post-disbursement of these grants, whether they actually have helped to sustain young people's jobs, Chairperson. In that KPI, we aim to create and sustain 3,176 jobs. We managed to achieve a target of 3,718. There remains, Chairperson, a huge demand for young people on the grant and voucher programs. Young people love this program. They seem interested in pursuing entrepreneurship, and they are hungry for funding for their youth-owned enterprises. Our grant program, just to give you some statistics, is divided into 3 different sets of grants. We have cooperatives, we have individuals, and we have companies which are registered companies. In there, the majority of the target was achieved through supporting enterprises and companies. Chairperson, we then reflect on the grants issued per branch of the NYDA. Some highlights there, the Durban branch issued the most grants to youth-owned enterprises. Port Elizabeth branch issued the most grants to individuals. And the Polokwane branch issued the most grants to cooperative programs. If we look at jobs created and sustained, this KPI is measured through all of the entrepreneurship programs that we support. You'll see that the voucher program, by and large, contributes, the voucher and the grant programs contribute to jobs created and jobs sustained. Chairperson, that's because the voucher program really, after grant funding is disbursed, it helps to provide businesses with room to grow. So when a young person has a business, they need marketing services, they need printing services, they need help doing their tax or their accounting. We support them through the voucher program, which helps to keep these businesses sustainable over the long term. The grant program really contributes to the initial creation of jobs for youth-owned enterprises. If we look at our business support services, so our non-financial support, you'll see there is a stretch of different service offerings that we offer, from training to mentorship to market linkages, rural development, CIPC assistance. We provide a service whereby we assist young enterprises with registering their companies with CIPC, with maintaining their compliance status. So that total of 63,000, you'll see, is broken down between those relevant targets, the majority of which is contributed through the entrepreneurship development program training. If we then look at the community development projects supported, in this area, those are the projects and the provinces in which we supported. You'll see there was a very strong emphasis in this financial year on forestry and furniture making as a result of that sector not really being very much transformed. You'll find that the same market players play over and over within the furniture and forestry making. So we really attempted to intervene in that sector and give young people the opportunity to play in that sector where they may not have previously been able to. We also supported projects in the area of hydroponics through vegetable production. Those young people are now supplying major corporations like Woolworths and ShopRite. We also assisted with one program in Gauteng with the manufacturing of musical instruments. Chairperson, if we then move to the second KPI, being education and skills development, the first strategic objective is to facilitate and implement education opportunities to improve quality education for young people. In that regard, the advice of this committee has always been that once the Second Chance Matric Rewrite program has reached its maturity, that the NYDA hands over this program to the Department of Basic Education. In that regard, we produced a handover report. We've had various engagements with the Department of Basic Education, who are now taking that report and aiming to take that program forward in future financial years. We support young people through the NYDA Solomon Mahlangu Scholarship Fund program against a target of 440. We managed to support 444. We had partnerships with the National Skills Fund and the Road Management Traffic Corporation. In respect of career guidance, we had a target of 889,000. We managed to achieve 981,000. The Deputy President has taken it upon himself to champion career guidance, and there was a big career guidance fair hosted in Upington as a collaboration between the Presidency and the NYDA. In respect of the strategic objective to facilitate and implement skills programs, our target was to implement 500 young people participating in our technical skills program. We achieved a target of 745. In there, we were able to partner with Google on a digital skills program to really provide young people, and this program speaks to providing young people with technical skills in areas such as construction, plumbing, critical artisan skills, as well as digital skills. In respect of the number of young people supported through our jobs program really aims to provide young people with the support they need to cross over and obtain the first job that they may need to have. In there, we aimed for a target of 61,200. We reached a target of 71,300. We entered into a partnership with Catalyst and the Jumpstart programs, which are the Mr. Price Foundation CSI programs, which enabled us to exceed the target that we aimed to achieve. Chairperson, on the table there, you'll just see breakdowns of the technical skills training programs, the career guidance programs, the Solomon Mahlangu, the life skills and job preparedness, as well as the jobs placement programs. All the respective breakdowns per provinces. For the career guidance, we break it down into how many one-on-one career guidances we do, how many career guidance booklets we distribute, and how many group career guidance services we offer. Chairperson, I'll just pause for a minute to reflect on a beneficiary story. The young lady you see up there is Kefilwe Litebe. She's a first-year civil engineering student. She's a beneficiary of the Solomon Mahlangu Scholarship Fund program. Her story says that she's just a girl from an average family. She has two other siblings who are also at university, and her guardian was going through tough times to manage the fee payment. The Solomon Mahlangu Scholarship Fund enabled her to be bailed out. We hope that one day she will contribute to major infrastructure projects in South Africa. Another beneficiary story is Lakin Seri Seconds. She's 21 years old. She's studying towards a Bachelor of Medicine and Surgery at the University of Free State. We also hope that she'll contribute to the critical health sector in South Africa in future years. Chairperson, if we go into the third key performance area of the NYDA, which reflects on health and well-being. In that, our strategic objective is to facilitate access to health and well-being programs. The number of young people that we assisted, our target was 210,000. We achieved a target of 348,000. Our target was met and exceeded due to resources that we leveraged from the Start Here campaign and the Back to School campaign. In the area of National Youth Service, Chairperson, we were able to achieve both our KPIs relating to registered projects to implement the National Youth Service Program, as well as our KPI relating to institutions which implement NYS. We also then have further KPIs relating to the NYS volunteer program, the number of young people participating in National Youth Service volunteer programs, and the number of young people participating in NYS Category 1 programs. You'll see there graphical representations of the breakdown of NYS programs over the various provinces. Chairperson, if we move to the area of governance, the agency, as we have mentioned, achieved for the first time is 100% of all its key performance indicators for the financial year under review. We also achieved the three-star clean audit opinion, which the DG and the CEO alluded to. The AG, as you know, expresses an opinion on annual financial statements, on our annual performance report, and on compliance with laws and regulations. Chairperson, if we look at the journeys that's been in that table, in 2013-14, the AG measured our compliance with financial management regulations at just 14%. That means we were only complying with 14% of relevant regulations. Today, that number has reached 93%. With regards to performance reporting, in 2013-14, we were at 50%. Today, we are at 83%. In respect of compliance, we were at 14% in 2013-14. Today, we sit at 92%. If we look at the area of financial management, some of the financial performance highlights for the financial year that has been, the overall transfer payment from the Department of Planning and Monitoring and Evaluation decreased from 409 million to 405 million as the third year of fiscal cuts for the budget came into effect. In spite of that, Chairperson, we were able to increase our direct youth development projects and grant disbursements from about 143.5 million to just about 172 million. That's a year-on-year increase of about 19%. That was mainly done as our restructuring process was completed in January 2016, which overall reduced employee costs from 209 million to 143 million, which is a 32% reduction. We also managed to raise, through donor funding partners, 113.4 million rand. Some of our major partners is the Development Trust through the Expanded Public Works Program, the Services CETA, who we implemented internship programs with, the Industrial Development Corporation, which supports our voucher program, and the Flemish Government, which supports our NYS volunteer program. Based on the Auditor General's report, we remain a going concern as assessed by our financial and our liquidity position. Chairperson, for the financial year under review, we received a budget allocation including donor funding partners of 451.7 million. We spent about 451 million, which translates to a 100% spending of allocation. If you look at the split between our projects and operations costs, just about 50% of our cost goes into direct youth development projects. About 19% is spent on administration and operations, and about 32% is spent on employee costs. If we look at our financial performance highlights, we continue to implement cost containment. The major cost containment project that we've also implemented is the relocation to a new compact head office. That will generate savings for us of 12 million rand per annum and about 40 million rand over the medium-term expenditure framework. We further done reductions on the administration program, our travel, and our outsourcing costs to compensate for the reduced budget allocation. If we reflect on HR information, that's just some of the statistics in respect of HR information. Chairperson, we employ 190 females in the NYDA. We employ 131 males within the organization. If we look at the gender balance on our board, males make up about 57% of the board, females is 43%. On EXCO, it's a direct 50-50% split. And at the overall NYDA, 59% females, 41% males. a big program for us post-restructuring, Chairperson, was creating a high-performance culture within the NYDA. Based on the results of our skill audit, we did determine that in some cases, our employees required further development, both through formal education, on-the-job training, as well as informal training sessions. In that regard, we've raised our training expenditure of our personnel to about 2.43%. So we spend about 3.4 million training our employees against a personnel budget of about 142.5 million rand. An average training cost per employee of about 7,300. Chairperson, to reflect a little bit going forward for the 2017-2018 financial year, as you know, we have a new board of directors within the agency, and they have taken time to craft their strategy and vision for the agency going forward. A big focus for them remains the universal access to young people of opportunities offered by the government and by the National Youth Development Agency. If we look at the products and services of the agency, they still remain mainly in metropolitan areas, which continues to reflect the party's spatial planning. Those in rural areas are cut off from engaging with services of the NYDA. The board has made it their target to reach young people in all district municipalities of South Africa and to have at least, by the end of their term of office, a fully functional office in each district municipality. Furthermore, Chairperson, we have procured our first mobile outreach vehicle, which can visit deep-lying rural areas and which has functionality, free Wi-Fi, to enable young people to access products and services of the NYDA. The board's target is to have at least two of these mobile outreach vehicles deployed in all 9 provinces to ensure that they are continuously serving those young people. Chairperson, for the board as well, the National Youth Service Program is to be intensified to reach out the targets that have been set. The NYS program should be implemented across the geographical space of the country, and NYD should create a blueprint and a center of excellence for the implementation of NYS program across government. Furthermore, the NYD should conduct cutting-edge research and development and should provide input to policy development across government policy to ensure that it has a youth element and a youth focus, since youth remains a critical area for development. Chairperson, we also know that the DPME budget mandate paper has elevated youth to priority number 2 in terms of future funding from National Treasury. Furthermore, Chairperson, the board has committed itself to establishing 2 funds, the first one being a National Youth Fund. As I mentioned earlier, we've seen a huge uptake in the demand for young people on the NYDA grant funding program. But our grant funding program is capped at 100,000 rand per entrepreneur. We find that many businesses grow beyond this value, and it becomes necessary for the NYDA to be able to support these young entrepreneurs through access to capital and access to markets. As we know, access to capital remains a challenge in South Africa, especially for startup and survivalist businesses. In that regard, we want to establish a national youth fund that the board will raise funds for, and that we can then use to oversee and to fund youth entrepreneurs. Furthermore, we want to establish a national skills fund to really contribute to that severe skills shortage that we see amongst young people. We know that the statistics about the number of young people without matric is quite high in South Africa, that those young people don't possess the skills to be employed in the formal economy. And therefore, this national skills fund really talks to us having a large-scale implementation of skills training to make sure our young people are employable in the market. Lastly, Chairperson, the amendment of the NYDA Act remains a priority of the board, and to really establish provincial presence of the agency through amendment from a Section 75 entity through to a Section 76 entity. Chairperson, with that, thank you very much for the time. We'll take questions.
Thank you so very much. Members, here's the report before us. Uh, I'm doing the routine so that I, but I'm tempted because there's no other hand other than taking Honorable Kasim, then if there are any other tempting hands, then I'll join them. Oh, Honorable Dombela as well. Okay, Honorable Kasim, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chair. I just want to thank the NYDA for the comprehensive report, which is definitely, I see a huge improvement in the presentations. A lot of our previous inputs have been inculcated, and I want to appreciate that. The second thing that I wanted to say, Chairperson, is that the NYDA were here in the last meeting, and there were a lot of inputs that were given, that I had given in that meeting, that apply here as well. Unfortunately, I wasn't here for the responses, and I'm waiting for the minutes to be able to have a look at that. So I'm sure when those minutes come, we'll be able to have a look at what those responses are. So I'm not going to repeat everything that I said then, Chairperson, because a lot of it still does remain relevant, and I hope that that will be included when we discuss our PRRRs, etc. But what I wanted to say was the following. The first thing is that, again, the appeal is made that more funding is needed for the NYDA, and that this is justified because the NYDA has improved its governance, has improved its bureaucracy, just to summarize. Also that in order to reach young people more, that one needs to ensure that the NYDA is present in provinces, hence the change in its designation, and that the NYDA can reach young people, particularly in rural areas. So I wanted to make the following comment, Chairperson, which I think is very important. The first is that I don't think anyone can deny, looking at the reports of the NYDA and from what is apparent, that there has been an improvement in the manner in which the bureaucracy is run. Whether it is in the Auditor General's reporting or whether it is just in some basics that were not there previously and the manner in which the NYDA was run, there has been an improvement in the running of the bureaucracy. I wanted to ask the question to perhaps both of the officials that are here, because I know the Chairperson and Deputy Chairperson are probably on their way to Russia at the moment. But I wanted to ask the question that a lot of this would probably stem from, and this is me just giving a comment, and I'd like them to give their view on this, the previous board, because things are set in place by a board. There's a vision, there's restructuring that takes place. That board was chaired by Yershin Pillay. Of course, there's a new chairperson and deputy chairperson of the board. There's a new leadership of the board. What is the difference? Is there any difference that has been experienced in the NYDA? Because there's been a change in the leadership of the board. What is their opinion in that regard? Is there any difference? If not, do we expect there to be any change in the vision thereof that will affect the running of the bureaucracy or the manner in which the bureaucracy runs? I want to ask that question to the officials that are present. And the second thing that I want to say, and the last thing that I said, I'm going to say, because I'm not going to repeat everything that I said in the last meeting, is that there are a lot of programs that are run by the NYDA. And I said it in the last meeting that a lot of these things should be run by other government departments anyways. And just because, I know in the past the criticism has always been that the NYDA can't run its bureaucracy very well, or that there were kissing parties, etc. Fortunately seems to be a feature of the past. But just because we can now run the bureaucracy well doesn't necessarily mean that the bureaucracy must exist. Because, I mean, if you ask the IFP, they'll tell you that you must have a department for youth, a youth department, a ministry, a youth ministry. We now have a ministry for small businesses. We've got a number of new ministries, and we've got the NYDA, the public entity, that is running programs that, quite frankly, should be run by existing departments, and some of the programs are now being handed over to existing departments, like the Matric Relief Program. So I just wanted to make that comment. That's not for you. That's just my view, and that's the comment of the Democratic Alliance,
that just because the bureaucracy can be run well or improved does not necessarily mean that the bureaucracy must exist. Because still, and this was a comment that was made the last time as well, we still have half of the budget going towards sustaining that democracy, the bureaucracy, rather than actually reaching young people on the ground. Actually, the limited resources available, as much resources needs to go through a smaller government that is having more money going into programs rather than into a bureaucracy in order for young people to be able to progress. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Member. Honourable Thomas,
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the report. Chairperson, I have noted with interest that of the 14-page report, each page has got a footnote that says, third clean audit, 100% performance. Frankly, the performance of the NYDA so far has earned a lot of respect from us and confidence. Is it a strategic approach that 14 pages should be footnoted with that? Are we going to get the same, the next coming report, will it be the same? Will it have this kind of a footnote? Or is it going to be a permanent feature henceforth? I'm just interested in that, Chair. But of course, we applaud them for the good work that they have done. Chairperson, on the issue of visibility of the agency, how do they envisage opening as many satellite offices as possible? Because that has always been a concern. And I would also like to know, after having signed an MOU with municipalities, how many satellite offices have already been opened? I know that the chairperson has always cried foul about the number of offices that are there in provinces. If we were to have a satisfactory scenario environment, Comrade Kato, what is your exact target of the number of offices that you'd like to have? Of course, that goes along with hand in hand with the budget. Chair, I think that would be all for now. Or maybe the last one. You have created 3,781 jobs. I just wanted to check whether you said sustained jobs. I'm not sure. I'm very zero. So are they permanent or temporary? So when you talk about sustained jobs, you are fine. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Mr. CEO, it's because you said you are going to deal with the political issues. You should have added political administrative issues. Hence then, the question that has been raised by Honorable Kassim is in order based on your introduction. But I will also advise you that don't bother to the politics deal with it. Because what he's asking, actually, without paraphrasing what you're asking, is linked to what Honorable Ndombele is asking in terms of the footnote. Because what I think you are trying to say to us that it's going to be a permanent feature, whether it's written there or not. But is it within your means to do that? That's the question that is being asked. But I'm happy that the DG, is here that will take up that one. Because it's very important what is being asked as a comment. It might be political, of course, I agree, but it's not political because we must sustain it. The arguments that they are raising in terms of the advancement of more funding, if it's not sustainable down the line within 8 months, Treasury definitely, with our scarce resources, will not. But I'm just saying, The other one that I would not put it as a question, but I'm sure when we are dealing, because we have raised it even previously, these issues, I'm repeating them, CFO, that the issue that there are 9 provinces in this country, but there's a very loud one that says that in terms of your Solomon Mahlangu beneficiaries, your Northwest, noting the population of course, but in terms of the youth population, is quite sizable, and also your Northern Cape, there's very low appetite. Probably it's what causes that, or it's because of our thing in terms of our visibility or what, and how do we intend to address that one? Because noting that you are only deploying your mobile office in KZN, whereas in terms of your own staff also says that there's been a lighter uptake in terms of Solomon Mahlangu, in terms of the your grants and financial support that you provide. If you can just school me on that, I'll be very happy. But also, you are automatically expected also, but also led by the board to have an MOU, signed a formal MOU with the municipalities where you've got that partnership. In the municipality in question, or it's going to be a provincial regional office, a mobile office, how it's going to be housed, probably to say that, because there are other things which might not be important now because you have delivered this vehicle, but there are other things that are we then, even our staff issues of overtime, also working away from home and all those things. But in summary, I want to say all the other soft issues to make the vehicle viable, have we done that homework since we are going to be launching very soon? I think you said that, because you need also to partner with other departments or financial institutions when it goes out. Is there any clear one? Because we wouldn't like to have a launch and raise the appetite of the young people in those areas that we would have prioritized for the launch, but moving forward there's no roll out of the program as it were in terms of the actual services that the mobile office should be providing. The other one for me that I would like to raise is the, it's well and good when you also overperform, but also as this side, we would like to know what impact does it have in the budget? What does that mean? But I must applaud you, the money that you have managed to get from the, what did you say, from?
Donor.
But also the other one that you owe us, now I remember, but the donor funding, now I remember. Also, you reminded me that the chair, deputy chair, on their way to China, Russia, wherever. It's good, and the partnerships that we were having through the NYDA. But you remember, CEO, we did ask you in 2015, towards the end of the year, this time of the year, to say that we would love to get value add in all the study tours and MOUs that we have with other countries, even the African countries. I know that, because it's not about only you getting exposure and also impacting the lessons, but also there's more that they can learn from us, but also there must be a value add. It cannot be. So if you, in the next meeting, when you come back by end of October, if you can give us that information, if you don't have it in your fingertips, would love to get that. Other than that, I'm not going to thank you before your response. The other one. Oh, no, it's for DG, that one. I'll raise it. I'll make a note on it. Although it's pertaining to NYDA, but I'll raise it when you present. Over to you, the CEO.
Thank you very much, Chair and honorable members. I think I'll take your guidance and steer clear of the question of the necessity of the continued existence of the agency. Maybe DG might attempt it, but I'll pack it myself. And just to say that as it relates to the change of leadership insofar as the board is concerned, one can say that there has been a
a commitment by this board to us as executives or as administrators, for lack of a better word, that the intention is to sustain and improve, and that this board will do everything in its power to make sure that there is no regression. So I think I'll leave that one there. And then say that if I speak about the footnote, really is deliberate and intentional by all accounts, and it's on the one side a plea to the members of this portfolio committee to say that the agency has demonstrated. We are reminding you that as you page through the presentation, you are reminded that it's been 3 years of clean audit, that it's been this continued trajectory of high performance, so that our call for additional resource can really be permanent mark in the thinking of honorable members. So it's intentional. It's an aggressive situation. And I think the other part, which is more aligned to a direct response to the question, is that we have committed ourselves to good governance. We have committed ourselves to creating and sustaining a high-performance organization. So this is a commitment to say that our intention is to make sure that the future remains the same and that it only gets better. So I think that would be the response to that particular question. And then the other issues of satellite offices, how many satellite offices or local youth offices are active and how many offices ideally would like to have. Through the partnership that we have with the LG CETA and the recent one that we entered into with NASFAS, we have 110 fully active offices now, where we have deployed young people through the internship program, who, if you go to those offices, you will find someone that will be able to assist young people. So at that point, at this point, that's where we are. Even though we have signed about 283 agreements MOUs with local municipalities, by and large, the other offices are not fully operational because of the resource challenges. If I speak about the ideal, it is the intention and the commitment of this board that by the time their term of office comes to an end, at least every local municipality has a satellite office which could be either represented by an internet kiosk. It may not be a manned office, but it should be an internet kiosk where a young person can be able to access internet and interact with opportunities that exist, either in the public sector, private sector, or even civil society for that matter. But the ideal, as the CFO has indicated in his presentation, the board would like to at least have one full service branch for every district municipality by the time their term of office comes to an end. Obviously, the idea there is that there must be a better argument for more resources. Well, we acknowledge that it is not possible to do that with current allocation. So for us to be able to do that, we will need the support of Treasury and maybe better collaboration with other government departments and government-owned, state-owned entities, as it were. But that is the ideal and what this board has committed itself to work towards. Similarly, when it relates to the outreach vehicle, the idea is, as the CFO has indicated, the board would like to, at the end of their term of office, to at least have two of those vehicles per province. The strategy that we are intending to deploy is twofold. One is to engage private sector and, in particular, motor vehicle manufacturers to partner either through their CSI or as part of contributing to youth development in this country, so that we don't necessarily have to burden the state coffers with the acquisition of this vehicle, but we can get them through, you know, those CSI programs that the vehicle manufacturers who are operating in South Africa can be able to do or to contribute towards youth development, whilst we will still try
and fundraise elsewhere, also, and continue to engage government, National Treasury in particular, for increased funding in that regard. On the question of jobs, when we speak about sustained jobs will be those jobs that would have been created before, either through interventions that are outside of the NYDA activities, but through our contribution, we're able to ensure that where these youth-owned enterprises could have reduced the number of their employees, they're able to sustain them. Whereas new jobs are those that are created through our direct intervention. And then on the Sonoma Mahlangu Scholarship Fund, the model that we've approved or that we've adopted and for the Sonoma Mahlangu Scholarship Fund is that we have partnered with all universities in the country. So young people must first apply and get accepted by the university before they are able to access the Sonoma Mahlangu Scholarship Fund. So what we've seen is that young people in the respective provinces that are appearing in the presentation have been the ones that have been able to come through that particular process. But moving forward, we have entered into a partnership with one organization where there will be a deliberate promotion of the Sonoma Mahlangu Scholarship Fund, specifically in rural and peri-urban schools, to try and improve the uptake from those particular areas. So we are hoping that as we move forward, the representation will improve and it will get better through those type of interventions. And I think I would have covered everything, Chair, and the rest of the other issues will then come through as we make present. Oh yeah, the last one, the issue of the value add or return investment on trees. I think what we can commit to do, Chair and Honourable Members, is to present what has been the return investment on the recent trees that the organisation would have embarked on. Because as you correctly say, everywhere where we have gone, there has been something that came out of it. If I make an example of the recent trip to Chicago, we have signed an agreement with the African Global Chamber of Commerce, where they have committed to assist with facilitating funding for youth-owned enterprises in South Africa, so long as the minimum requirement, capital requirement, is at least $2 million US dollars, which is an equivalent for about 33 million rands in South African currency terms. And that partnership has also includes their commitment to host at least 15 young entrepreneurs from South Africa next year in June in an entrepreneurship conference which will be addressed by the former President of the United States, Barack Obama, which will also work as a networking session between young African entrepreneurs and potential investors from the United States, as it were. There are other African countries where we have exchange programs with the Namibian government and so forth and so on. But I think it might be useful for us to then maybe just submit a report on those particular trips and what then became the return on investment on all of them. Thank you very much.
Also, it does also impact on your operational budget, as it were, in terms of your traveling costs, in terms of the line items. The other one that I would like you to look at moving forward in your plans is the work that is being produced by SFSA. In particular with the, because I like that you are saying that you've got this technical agreement, development partnership with Google. But also I know the acting statistician will say that we're consuming nation. But also, if we can look at also our own with partnership with the Center for Innovation, Science and Technology, and other technical innovation centers that we have within the country, that also we must encourage young people also to venture to that space. And I'm also tempted to raise the issue that the learned people, they say we're in a technical revolution, isn't it? Is it technical revolution? Robotic digital revolution is the right term. But also I'm worried that the way also even your the activities that you finance or you give grants to, they are still the conventional one in most cases. The ones in the space that as young people should start migrating to were not, and I'm saying there's something that your brain must be put together to say how best can we also take advantage of that opportunity. Other than that, honorable members, that will bring us to the end of NYDA, because this one is just a take-home a suggestion that I think it might add value. I assume we are done. Thank you very much. While you are walking yourself away from here, we will be taking census A. And I don't know why we separated them, because this should be followed by GPME, but we'll take status A, fine. And I'll request NYDA don't go until all of us as a team DPME were presented. No, because there are other issues that will raise that also would be concerning you. And your jacket, they don't like your jacket. Take it. I know. I think the acting physician will lead us. I hope I'm using the right designation, saying acting. In the absence, I assume not the ladies are actors, only the gentlemen that act, isn't it?
It's true, but it's quite interesting because the current Statistics Act, with all its bells and whistles, doesn't provide for the acting capacity. The statistician general technically travels with representative power, but we usually make such administrative arrangements in-house so that the organization can function. I will quickly introduce the team chair. The team that I come with, seated to my left here is Celia Dietlek. She heads the strategy unit of StatusA. The gentleman who's walking away from me is Begima Tundra, he's the CFO, so whatever we have to deal with finances is the man we must beat up, Chen. It's just that possibly today there's no beating. And my colleague to the far left is Actory Henning. She's responsible for corporate matters in StatusA. So finance, HR, and facilities fall under her corporate services. My colleague Ashwell Jeneka is seated there. He's Actor is a DDG for corporate services, and Ashwell is a DDG for marketing, stakeholder management, and communication. It's a new function that we have put in place, and in the annual report he was responsible for statistical support and informatics. Chair, we are going to talk about building a system for over the last two decades, and also talk about the organizational and financial performance for 2016 and 2017. We will look at the risks, and we will finally conclude with the priorities going forward. Chair, it's very critical that we put this context that we are not just pinning the matter of statistical development just to the financial year alone, because whatever we see as the fruits that we are benefiting now in this financial year come from all the years that StatusA has been putting brick by brick into building a national system of statistics. And as such, Chair, in the next slide,
which talks about building a statistics system. I rather start with where we are now. We are talking about statistical reform. That is phase five. So if you look at organizations, they grow from, and party to it is evolutionary processes, while they have some sort of disruptions that occur from time to time. And the first phase that we had to deal with straight into democracy was integration. And it's because, Chair, we had a history in South Africa where numbers used to trump methods. So numbers would be determined first. And once they were determined, methods had to follow suit so that they can exclude the majority of the people in the country. And that integration was very necessary. And in the years 1999 to 2004, we had to build integrity into a statistical system, including having a statistical a Statistics Act, Act Number 6 of 1999, which would mean that the independence of StatsSA and the relationships that occur between StatsSA and the minister that is who's responsible, and in the current state is the minister for planning, monitoring, and evaluation. That relationship is well regulated, as well as the council that advises both minister and the statistician general. It's for that reason that my colleague, DG for DPME, Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation, had to indicate that she will carry the presentation for DPME and the NYDA, while StatsSA would actually present on its own, because both DPME and StatsSA report to the minister in the planning, and that was a deliberate arrangement. Even if we are in one place, there is no corrosion whatsoever in terms of the way the numbers are produced, but it serves to strengthen the responsibility of the planning function with the numbers, so that we can have what we call evidence-based policy formulation. Then we dealt with transformation and the of course, further revolution, and currently we are at statistical reform, which includes phase five, as I have indicated, includes legislative reform, more to strengthen coordination, Chair, but I'll come to that later. Let us look at the phases again. In the 1995 to 1999, and my eyes are limiting me now because the screen that I'm using doesn't help me a lot, but I know half the things that are written here. The one thing that we can take home largely was Census 96. Census 96 happened in that first phase, and it was bringing a country that had last been counted as one in 1970, and from there on had been counted as separate entities with different methods. As I've indicated, numbers were trumping methods. One of the things that we will remember in the second phase of 2000 to 2004 was the introduction of GIS, the whole issue of linking everything that we produce to geography. And when we released the results of Census 1996, they were linked to geography. 2005 to 2009, the whole issue of the prices, statistics, the whole issue of starting to understand the re-engineering of labor market statistics, as well as putting in the income and expenditure survey that would build into a basket of goods that the nation is using. Of course, we also came up with the whole issue of a footprint below the provinces, sub-national and sub-provincial footprint, with the establishment of district offices. By 2010, we were now in a space where we were talking about Millennium Development Goals. And one of the things that we had to deal with at the time, sorry, I'm not moving, yeah, By 2010, we had to deal with the Millennium Development Goals. You will remember, Chair, that the President, as of 1999-2000 at the United Nations General Assembly, UNGA, had decided that we need to track development. And the baseline report at the time came out, and we had to take this report. At the time, we had two parallel reports going to the UNGA. We would have a report that would be presented by government while civil society would continue to produce their report. That's where that function of independence came in, Chair. Because when we went back to civil society and engaged them, and we said to civil society, we are a government department, but we have independence as regards our methods. We report to government for administrative and political purposes, certainly. But one thing we can assure you is that when we release our numbers, there's no precise, not even by our minister, nor the president of the country. We can brief them with the Statistics Council being available when we brief them about the veracity of the methods. But the independence is guaranteed. From there on, we were able to win this matter. We would go to the UNGA and have one report presented by the country. And that actually dealt a lot of confidence in the way we do, we deal with matters in the democratization process in our country. As of now, Chair, in 2015 to 2017, you will remember that we are dealing with the post-2015 development agenda, and the 72nd session of the UNGA, United Nations General Assembly. Our minister, Minister Radebe, in the presidency, presented a baseline report for the SDG Sustainable Development Goals in the post-2015 development agenda. And such a report, once it was presented, it will be shared continuously with the nation. And this report is a culmination of the consultative processes that we have had continuing with civil society and outreach to all matters in the nation. So we have improved governance, we have dealt with the whole issue of the 30-day payment, and we have dealt with clean audits, cost efficiency, and we have again dealt with a public-private partnership in the building, in the setting up of our new building, which this committee was invited to come and launch. Now, Chair, the next slide just gives a trajectory of how we have come about in terms of our coming from unqualified audits to a clean audit. We had a history in the early 90s of difficulties. The Auditor General couldn't express opinions on our books, but we can give you assurances that we will try very much to sustain this. And I think all the departments under the minister under the Minister for Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation are working very hard to try and sustain that. Chair, the key indicators that we produce look at environmental statistics. We can no longer talk about agriculture without looking at the ecosystem and the emissions. You will remember very well that the Kyoto Protocol has an issue that was raised by developed nations of not wanting to be measured, even in countries that are relatively developing and poorer, where they are polluting the most. So it's one of the issues that we went to raise at the United Nations Statistics Commission, and we are actually taking this matter forward. Crime and justice, the victims of crime statistics, we collect from households while the police collect from administrative records, where they look at the numbers of cases as reported, whereas we go to cases that were not reported. And one of the things that we are picking up is usually your domestic violence and issues of social crime within families and households, which is never reported. So we talk to the victims of crime here. Population statistics is not only the matter of population censuses, but we look at the whole issue of mortality, the whole issue of what the causes of death. We release a report every year that tells the nation
what is it that is taking the lives of South Africans? In the society, we look at unemployment and employment statistics in general, as well as service delivery and living conditions, education, health, other issues. The economy, Chair, the GDP will never be forgotten. A nation that would never produce its GDP would never be able to measure the well-being of the contributions of the programs and the policies that it's making towards its citizens. And we continue to tell South Africans about the CPI, which the Reserve Bank uses for their inflation. But we also take gate prices as in factory gate prices in the form of producer price indices. And of course, from local government, we talk about issues of spending in service delivery and as well as tertiary institutions. Chair, I will start to move fast, but I can't move fast before I give you the organizational performance. We are saying our overall performance is 87%, of which 77.9% was achieved on schedule, achieved early 4.6%, achieved late 4.3%. But in achieved late, it's very interesting because we have control dates that we put. So anything that falls outside that control date is classified as achieved late. Not achieved is 13.3%. And of course, let me come to the spending capacity. We have spent 97% of our budget. And why we are not aligned with such spending is largely because of the vacancies that were not filled, as well as the reprioritization owing to resources that were earmarked for the community survey. And the vacancy rate is about 11%, 10.9% to be exact. And women in SMS, 41%, that is 40.6% to be exact. And 1.2% for people with disability. We haven't actually gone to the 2% target that we are expected to deliver. Chair, let us look at what you asked us to do in 2016-2017. Community survey, we delivered the results in June 2016, within 2 months. Moving of GDP expenditure from the Reserve Bank, you will remember we have a history of dealing with GDP coming out of a production and expenditure side. The Reserve Bank has been responsible for expenditure side for 7 decades. We have moved that project, it's now in status A. We have dealt with integrative planning tools, and these include the growth accounting framework, the social accounting framework, as well as the supply and use tables, which will help us to track the economy as to what gets produced, gets sufficiently utilized in the country, and what doesn't get utilized should be out for export. But these tools are not meant for us. While there will be data and the work will be done within status A, our colleagues at DPME and other line function departments will benefit a lot from these tools. We have said we'll move into the new building. We did so in August 2016. The digital workplace, we are currently, we have actually conducted the citizenship satisfaction survey in KwaZulu-Natal in 2016 February to be exact, although it was planned in 2015. And we were able to release the result in June. So the community survey, we were able to release the results within 2 months. The rating of the CPI, which will assist us a lot in looking at the food, not the food basket, the basket of goods and services, which will actually link into the inflation. We are geared to deliver in January 2017. And legislative reform, Chair, is under consideration within status A, and of course progress is ongoing. Let us look at the risks that we are facing. We have experienced cuts in the budget coming out of 2017-2018 up to 2019-2020, and the amounts are illuminated as there as 141 million upwards. Now, what this creates for us, Chair, is that we cannot afford the warm bodies, and it's a serious risk. We have a critical gap in the posts that have to be filled, so it's increasing. And of course, there are activities that are legally binding that we cannot deal with. But to be specific, is that the consequences is that we will have inadequate funding to pay salaries for 2017-2018. That risk is already there. We already have 52 field workers in Gauteng that are temporary, that we cannot be able to continue with them. But generally, this matter is being addressed at another level in terms of moving internal resources. But it's one of the issues that we are dealing with, Chair. We have key statistical releases that will be delayed, and of course it could lead to a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And then let's look at critical post gap increases. We will face serious delivery of services such as GDP, CPI, and employment statistics. And building intellectual capacity is a very serious matter, Chair. It takes years to build capacity. If we lose some of the people, we will seriously struggle. Now, the consequences is that the CAPI transition is computer-assisted personal interviews. We have already invested about 200 million, and staff are in field, and we have labor action by field workers, and this matter that I raised in the Gauteng province is actually related to this matter specifically. And of course, the geo-referencing of information was that frame. The supplier is already appointed, and we do not have the funds to continue. So there are legal liabilities that we'll have to deal with. And Census 2021 is at risk. The IUSSP already committed 21 million. This is an international union of scientific studies of populations. Now, if you ask me, Chair, in the end and in the long run, there will be creep in the quality of the GDP, in the employment, population estimates, the living conditions surveys, as well as the income and expenditure surveys, and of course the CPI, fertility and mortality will be affected in the long run. Now, the key priorities for 2017-2018, Chair, we are looking at legislative reform, maintenance of basic statistics, integrated indicator framework, to modernize and improve on innovation and technology is very critical, Chair. We will restructure and rationalize where possible. One of the things is that we are not shying away from the fact that government has priorities where they must deploy financial resources. And as such, it means that government departments will have to do more with less. So we will certainly fall in line and rationalize, but certainly we also need to provide value-added products in this regard. Looking ahead, one of the things that, and when we look ahead, we are looking ahead with the fact that the current statistician general will end his services on the 31st of October this month. So as of 1st November, we are dealing with a leadership environment that will have to deal with the following challenges. Data and digital revolution, which we are moving into the CAPI transition, the computer-assisted personal interviews as of 1st January. We need to deal with intergovernmental projects, especially in managing relationships as regards particularly trade statistics. We have noted imbalances in the trade statistics, and this is work that we must deal with the Reserve Bank and SARS, and we have already been to brief Cabinet on this matter, so Cabinet has been well apprised, but there is work that State SA must deal with from the side of measurement, the balance of payments from the Reserve Bank, as well as issues of inspections from the side of SARS. Legislative reform, of course, we have touched on that it will be tabled in 2018, and the declining budgets continue to form a basis over which we make our decisions. Now, Chair, having said all these things, it's not it's by law. When we get the facts coming out of Stedse must produce the facts as they come. That is, the nation must know. When issues come, it is by law that we must elevate them to the right authorities, as in our minister, the Statistics Council, and the Portfolio Committee in Parliament. With all these issues, discussions are going on with our ministers and our colleagues at National Treasury. As of the next 2 days, there will be discussions to look at matters of budget so that some of these issues that we have by law to report to Parliament are not actually adversely affected, so that Stats SA should be able to continue producing the numbers, and we are confident of our engagements. Our minister has been supporting us all the time throughout all these challenges in dealing with matters of the budgets. Chair, I have looked at the computer here and the papers that I have, but it looks like the next slide is blank, Chair. Thank you.
I understand your eyesight has got some issues. Other than that, thank you so much. And actually, you have covered even, you have preempted some of the questions that one would have asked. Having said that, honorable members, here we are in SSA in terms of the year that was. Any questions, comments, and I'll start from my left, far left here, and then all of us will follow. Honorable Mtau, over to you, sir.
It's a pity the SG is not here. I would have been ribbing him about his yellow jacket and uniform. I don't know have any of you seen the story today about how it happened? Very nice story in the paper today about why he had a yellow suit. Well, you go get the business there and read it today. Actually, it's a very nice story, I thought. Anyway, he's not here. Two things. I've got a lot. I mean, I just need to deal with two things. The issue that has been touched on here, and the SG has already raised it previously because of the budget cuts and stuff like that, this loss of scarce skills, or what is now described as intellectual capital. Is this being tracked, and do we know what kind of skills we are losing? Because indeed, as you rightly point out, some of these skills will probably cost us a lot more if we lose them, to recover them and maybe to bring them back. However, I want to juxtaposition that with something you sort of glossed over here in terms of the report, reference to fruitless and wasteful expenditure. The AG records a number of cases which have been investigated and stuff that get quotes about 11 million, and that's a lot of money. But what interests me more than these other cases where people would book flights and not use them for travel and stuff like that, and there's a lot of money, hundreds of thousands of rand. There's a reference to 12 cases to the value of 22,000 rand, which have been investigated, and it has been recommended that this money should be recovered from the responsible officials. Has anything been done about that? Because obviously this would have been by March, of end of March this year. And if not, what is going to be done about it? And just to show you where the problem lies with this kind of thing of fruitless and wasteful expenditure. When you lament the fact that you have not been able to fill posts because you had to divert money to do a survey, which is good, it's important, it's urgent, and then you read on the other hand that there was fruitless and wasteful expenditure to be extended, that indicated something just does not gel. So would you just touch on that one? And of course, there's the issue of irregular expenditure to value of 7 million rand and stuff like that. But just touch on those things to see to just give us the comfort that even the people at Stats SA know that you can't just waste money. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mutau. Honorable Kasim, over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I've just got two questions that I'd like to raise. The first one is as it pertains to evidence-based policy making, which was referenced in the report. The question that I have is, and I'm not sure if Stats will be able to answer this, but I'd like to get some sort of response. To what effect or to what extent has this taken place by the different departments or by our cabinet and by our governance? Because a lot of money is invested in ensuring that we have credible, reliable, up-to-date statistics, and if it's not being utilized by our governments, by our different departments, etc., towards achieving the goals set out in the National Development Plan, etc., then, you know, there's a major opportunity that's more than that. We are unlikely to meet all of those objectives or even shift those plans and keeping up with current conditions on the ground. So I'd just like to get some sort of a view as to where there might be, if there are any sort of lags in that respect, or where it's not taking place, what could be done further to ensure that it could be improved by our different departments, by our government, etc. My second question is as it pertains to the lack of funds to be able to secure our different series of statistics, etc., going forward, notwithstanding the issues raised by Honorable Mutau. What exactly is the level of the shortages? The so-called unfunded mandates, or how much is it that would be needed in the next budget or in an adjustment budget, etc., to be able to ensure that we're able to, in the bonus, let's just say, secure those statistics and programs going forward.
Honorable Youngblood.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to ask a couple of questions about the reasons for the high staff turnover and if you could indicate whether the budget cuts, whether that has affected the turnover rates, then maybe how many posts are still vacant, and then whether the staffing problems or the human resource challenges, whether that impacts on the quality, the production of quality statistical data and the achieving of key objectives and on data collection. And the operations of statistics in the provinces. Then I would like to know about you refer to sick leave without medical certificates, and there seems to be especially among level 6 to 8 and 9 to 12, which seems to be fairly high, what is happening there. And lastly, I would like to know whether you've got any strategy for employment equity and for women with disabilities. Thank you.
Honourable member, Honourable Van der Vaart, over to you, ma'am.
We are called. Honorable Ndomela.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks for the report. Chairperson, I just want to check with the Ndatamaru Deke. What are the outcomes of the financial statistics in the municipalities, and how does the information contribute in measuring financial performance of municipalities? And with the information that he has shared with us, what do you think are the precautionary measures that government can take to mitigate the negative impact on the GDP? Maybe it might not be within the mandate of State South Africa, but I would like a comment on that. And then my last interest, just for interest's sake, the Kyoto Protocol with its potential negative impact on weather across the world. Having established an international footnote, does that South Africa collaborate with, I don't know whether I'm calling it correctly, that's USA, to try and persuade the United States of America in recognition of the Kyoto Protocol, because that has a disastrous effect on our weather. We are aware of what happened in Johannesburg yesterday. We are also aware of what's happening in Durban today. So it might be coming to Cape Town very soon before we Parliament rises. So I'm just interested in that. Thank you very much.
Much also go to Northwest and Free State, no, but the question, DG, that I would like you to take care of also is the question that has been raised by Honorable Kasim, because I think your department has a major role to play in terms of the space that Honorable Kasim has raised. But having said that, also, just building up on Honorable Kasim's question as well, unfunded mandate, but to be specific, I think it's 18 months back or so that you are given a responsibility through the IEC court, judgment of the addresses, constitutional court. For me then, but I want to relate it with also with the budget and the technical human capital that we might have and losing at the same time. Where does it put us? I appreciate that they, also the department through the minister also is assisting to urge the treasury also to give you more money. But also linked to the human capital as well, it was last year's report where you reported that, it's you. There were 9 posts, if I think I'm, you'll correct me if it's the wrong department, but I think I'm correct. There were 9 posts, but you opted to fill up 6 posts because you were managing the, it's not you. No, I'm not picking at you, let me continue. Then you'll respond. Yeah. And please don't shake your head, because I can feel it here at this side. Anyway, you don't have an instances where you delay filling of vacancies because of your financial expenditure that in terms of balancing the books, and end up having installment filling of vacancies, but also which does have an impact in terms of your treasury taking your money if you're not using it. The other one that I would love from my side to raise not necessarily, it's a comment in terms of that at least you haven't given us a sense of comfort that while you are housed in the ministry, but also the separation, a fixed block of separating the two, not to come together, is there. And would love as this committee, a portfolio committee at the first instance, to ensure that it continues that way. When are you going, you have said next year? Reform, yeah, what that word is, legislative reform. I've said that, or we have said that, not I, we have said at this committee that we've got, just to remind ourselves that
in terms of the parliament program, we've got 70-30 split in terms of constituent work, 30% and 70. But next year, probably could be 50-50. That means then we'll have lesser time, probably 4 months in parliament, and then the rest, noting that is 2019, then after. So yeah, next year, we've been warning you, DG, whether you arrived yesterday or today, I must also press upon your good self that whatever is going, whether it's a cabinet level or I know that there are things that are happening somewhere there. But finally it has to come here. And none of us will be very happy while we are so passionate about SSA that it should be also be reformed and move with time. But there are issues of compliance and processes that legally we need to follow. And we wouldn't like the court to take to us that we didn't do enough consultation, because it's not just a cosmetic amendment. It's quite a serious one. But also because of the issues that also you have said previously. And I would like to say that, can you please, with your sister, DG, powers may be, whether at this side or in the Ministry or Cabinet, can they kindly be mindful of that, or else agree that in terms of the rollover, it will overlap to the new administration, which means the new administration has to deal with it and complete it and finalize it. And it would be unfortunate that you have been raising for quite some time. And it would be wrong for us not to raise that, because it does also impact on other issues that when we engage with you, we raise. I think you have, because the issues of the AGs, issues also honourable members have raised those ones. Also the wasteful honourable Van der Vaart, you raised those ones. But also there's a, just to recap honourable members, last year, yeah, early last year before June, we had a pillar hearings, ne? Was this year in March. Also where we were very uncomfortable with the abuse of the sick leave, as it were. And also in level 6 and 8 and 9 and 12, there's a high sick leave takeover, using usage of sick leave. What could be the cause? Have you also just worried yourself to, and that cause, how do we intend to remedy it? Because those are also the people that also, from where I'm seated, that makes the SSA as well tick, as much as the other levels, but these ones, they matter most, and it impacts them moving forward. It might, for now it hasn't, but it might moving forward if it's not properly managed. Thank you. Over to you, sir.
Chair,
the responses will spread them accordingly.
Chair, Ms. Henning will deal with all the HR and finance related matters, and she has made sure the CFO is here so that the right pages can be referenced. And then Ms. de Klerk will deal with all matters of performance. There were no specific questions, but that comment would be very critical. Mr. Gineka will deal with matters of the IEC and the geography, and I will deal with the matters of evidence-based policy formulation and how we are referenced with our colleagues. And I'm very happy that this presentation comes before our colleagues at DPM in make their presentation. Ms. Henning, you start.
Good afternoon all. Either all in the house. Please allow me to start off with some of these questions will cross up. The screen doesn't like me. Speak loud enough so everyone can hear me. Allow me to talk about the losses of skills and it was being tracked. If I refer you to our HR table in the very book one of SAPSA's annual report, you will see that every department is required to actually identify the pay scale and then monitor and track it through those tables. We've gone one step further in terms of tracking the pay scale, because also now, due to the budget cuts, have hit into Q1 onto the finance and governance side, which is also becoming a scarce skill within our ambitious studies, as we're already progressing our department towards accrual accounting basing as we move into the next financial year. On the process and what I do not have any cell phones with me. On the fruitless and wasteful expenditure side, I want to take you to the tables on fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And I'm referred to page 217 of book 1 of the annual report. And I'm going to take you to table 25, note 25 of the annual financial statements, 25.1 specifically. And you will notice that there has been a decrease in the current year fruitless and wasteful expenditure. One of the key drives in looking at statute and where we can look at every single cost efficiency saving was also to go and look at where can we save in the little bits and pieces. How do we curtail exactly this fruitless and wasteful expenditure? Part of those mechanisms, which was one of the slides that you've also had there, was also to institute that we negotiate every single quotation. We don't just accept the first, lowest, best quotation. At Statete, we negotiate outside, which the PFMA and the Treasury allows us to do, and the SG had appointed somebody very vicious as a chief negotiator for the department. So we don't just accept the three quotes. It actually gets reviewed by internal high-level personnel, and we're going to negotiate down. So we've been able to manage that, and I know it small sounds small money, but to us every rand is counting at this point in time. In terms of the 22,000, if I take you back to 13.2 of the notes as well, you will see that last year's amount is already recovered, or the previous year, the 15-16 year amount, is already recovered. And the 22,000 is already in process of recovery. Remember, we have to also respect the labor laws, which says I cannot take an amount immediately once off. I would love to do that. I did it when I was CFO. And then obviously I got wrapped over the knuckles for it, but we instituted because people need to understand you are not here to waste. You are here to work and make sure that every rand that gets spent of the public funds is accounted for and we've received some benefit for that particular money. When I take you to the irregular expenditure, it is important to understand also from the irregular expenditure side that there is the, in the definition itself, it is not the expenditure, so the money wasn't spent and nothing was received for it. We had received something for it, but how the money was spent in the SCM process or the compliance process, something was not adhered to. And that is not going to assist me in going to employ or curtail my vacancy rate in any way. And I think it's imperative that we note that down. I'm going to answer Honorable Kasim when he talks about the funds and the levels of shortages. So I have got a bundle of documents which shows the over expenditure estimated for the current 2016-17 year in excess of 93 million rand alone for compensation of employees. With regards to the rollover of 36 million rand that was not approved, that will also be an over expenditure. And on the goods and services, there would be an over-expenditure which I am trying together with my CFO and a collective management in Statisa to curtail so that we get one, the best value for the rand, but also eliminate any litigation that could come our way in terms of delaying or trying to stop any of the processes. Because for all of the contracts, all of the work that we've commissioned last year, which could not be completed in that year, not because we were delayed. It could not be completed because the contracts were running over the financial years, the government financial years, and that's why we asked for the rollover. If we don't continue with those, you're going to have an over expenditure that will then become a contingent liability over the years because we will face international litigation with the IUSSP, for example. With regards to Honorable Jongbloed, you asked about the staff turnover. Our staff turnovers, I'm going to refer you to page 117 of the annual report of Statistics South Africa, book 1 specifically, where the annual turnovers are measured and monitored by government and society at large. You'll see that our annual turnover is 4.4%. And that is mainly because we could not fill the post that we had in that financial year. From September 2016, we stopped filling any of our vacant posts, which at that stage was 318 at September, and it has increased to the 10.9% of the 3,500. We're looking at 386 posts that are vacant at this point in time. With regards to the service delivery impact, I'm going to touch on this, even though my colleague will give you some more detail. It is imperative to note that even though I'm the head of corporate services, I need to understand what is being done with the money in StatsSA. We have seen a decline in Q1 of the current financial year and creeping into Q2, where you will also see these articles that's been referenced, where we went public to say to our users, as we normally do, we believe in progressive accountability rather than being tracked down by some reporter. And you would find that we have actually started telling our users that they are delayed in our surveys. They are delayed in our releases of our surveys. It is having an impact. I myself play the role of 3 people within corporate services, and including taking up SCM right under my wing to monitor it, because I am extremely fearful of us getting an audit that has a compliance issue in it. It is very clear that we are set up for next year in terms of the over expenditure that we have. It will have an impact on our audit, but for as long as I'm at the helm, I will try and keep the governance side clean as possible. With regards to the sick leave without medical aid, so that's your people that will take leave one day. So I'll take leave maybe on a Wednesday, because the law says if I'm off 3 consecutive days, either on or on a Friday or a Monday or a day before or after a public holiday, I must bring in a sick certificate. These are your levels that you're looking at. And I'm going to address most probably, Mela Soma, your question as well with regards to the sick leave. The reason why our sick leave is increasing is because our people are overworked. You will see even in the community survey, we redeployed people from within StatsSA to go and assist with other projects. When you look at the staffing ratios that we have and the number of projects that we have, projects or surveys that we have, you will find that one person will be doing 6 to 7 tasks outside of what they were employed to do. So the KPIs are continuously increasing and being reinvented, and people are being asked to do more for the same work. But because we are passionate about this organization that we have built, the average age or years of people in StatsSA is 16 to 28 years. People there are long serving. Celia herself is one of those who come out of school. Ashwell is one of those. Rasenga is one of those people. And because they are passionate about the home that we have built and serving this country, you find that people continue to try and work. You'll see the annual leave as well. In my cluster, for example, I have people who then come to me just before June and say, I have to take leave now. And I say, but you can't take leave. And I have to make alternative arrangements with them so they don't lose their benefit. But June is crunch time in corporate services. In fact, there's never a rest, as some of them say, but that's what we need to do. So it comes from that kind, rather than people abusing the system. It is definitely not that. Okay? With regard to strategy for employment equity, we do have one. Obviously, with our downturn and our decrease in our capacity to fill our posts, it does have a toll, and you would find that our females in particular are being swooped up by other departments, like DPME as well, who's just swooped up one of our DDGs to them. But we do see that impacting on our employment equity and both our disability targets as well. There was a question that came along with regards to the budget the technical human and what we call the capital. I think Rasenga will take that up also with regards to the strategies that we've tried to put in place to be able to address that is limited now. Because the strategies that we have is to use one person trying to do three people's work or trying to split that the second vacant post work amongst three people. And it is taking a toll on people and their well-being that we have to look after. And the technical human capital that we have in Statista is being depleted. We are struggling. You'll see the declines, and if you study these reports well, you'll actually be able to track. And when you look at health and vital statistics, for example, and you go and track the delays that we're now experiencing in Q1 and Q2 of the service that they release, it is very evident. It's very evident to see there's your number of posts. That's been the decrease year on year in the vacancies, or the increase in the vacancies in that unit, and here is the impact in terms of the declining releases that we have. We are very concerned about quality at this point in time. So we're getting people to work Saturdays and Sundays as well now to try and come and cross-check with each other from other units within Statis A to make sure that we don't lose the credibility that we've built in terms of quality of statistics in this country. The last one, no, we don't delay posts, and we could not delay posts. That does not work with us. We had an average turnaround time. You'll see I joined in 2012. Where we had a vacancy rate of 13.9, we went down to an average of 6 week post-appointment in StatsSA. And unfortunately, I was blown out of the water by these cuts, so now I have to go back to the old methods of being able to recruit, because you can recruit in 6 weeks in government. You can do it. It's possible. I think I've covered my part.
You have virtually covered Celia's response, so I will let Ashwell deal with the issues of geography and the IEC.
Okay. Right to the basic.
Thank you, Chair. Before I look at the issue of geography, I know Rasenga said you would deal with Honourable Kasim's question, but I just want to start the process there, then he could also add more. On the issue of evidence-based policymaking, it's our assessment that the use is fairly low, especially when you go to municipalities and look at integrated planning, and we found that that's actually not happening. There's a struggle to develop the IDPs. So what we've done from our side is sort of to look at developing a program of capacity development within municipalities, and we've actually done this in Parliament as well, where we've started training of parliamentarians and other support staff on the use of our data and incorporating other data sets and to be able to spatially look at these data sets and make assessments. Now the same sort of program we've got for Parliament, which is an ongoing program, we're going to have another sessions with that. We're also going to roll out to municipalities, so to make sure that they could use our data, incorporate their data set, and then use GIS to look at these data sets. On the issue of the IEC and the Chief Justice saying we could help with the rolling out of addresses, and that would then be much quicker. When we piloted the rolling out of our addresses, it cost us roughly around 29 rand, 30 rand per address, and we could actually not do it much cheaper than that. And with that, we actually rolled out about 1 million addresses, and you need to roll out about 14 million more addresses to have the database. That's without maintenance. That's just rolling it out in one go. Now, we've built quite a lot of capacity in doing this, but you do then need about 150 million rand, and when we spoke to the role players, that money wasn't available. And we were not prepared to commit ourselves to such a rollout without money being available up front. And there was no indication that money was available, and we indicated to the role players that as soon as the money is available, they could come to us, and we'll have further discussions around that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Over to you,
Chair. I will start with evidence-based policy formulation. There is a lot of work that ourselves and DPME are currently looking at. One of the things that we will have in the end is an integrated system of information that will sit in the presidency, and then not only in the DPME alone. We would want to see all line ministries to sit with a dashboard of information, which is official and other statistics. As you are aware that the statistician general is responsible for official and other statistics. And the whole issue of the national system of official statistics and strengthening the administrative records. And administrative records is information that when people like Department of Education, their job is to provide education, but they know the number of children who are at school and who are not at school. They know who teaches what. That information is very critical. It needs to be graduated for use in planning. So that's what we are looking at between ourselves and our colleagues at DPME. So one of the things that we should appreciate, Chair, is that the whole issue of creating planning, monitoring, and evaluation in our country is less than a decade old. It was established in 2009, and while we expected to start moving and running on the first day, there are a lot of issues, especially statutes that are there within government that limit, even our colleagues from the DPME will indicate that there are limitations when they try to want to see accountability happening from the side of line ministries. That is why we need legislative reform from the side of state SA, and I guess that's why our colleagues have to put in place their legislation for planning, monitoring, and evaluation. That brings us to legislative reform, Chair. We, from the side of state SA, a lot of work has been done, but according to the current Act, because when you deal with coordination, you deal with production of statistics. We have to allow the Statistics Council to do their due diligence, because the Statistics Council advises both the Minister and the Statistician General in this regard, so that we are able to move forward. So both ourselves and Council are looking at synchronizing our times. But council has their own independence. We cannot impose on them on the time they should roll. Because if they lose their independence, it means the whole system of national statistics will have serious challenges. I have had a few times, Chair, where you have been directing our colleague at DPME to deal with the issue of legislative reform at state SA. You are actually making it a lot more complex, not even for them, for the whole system of national statistics. Because there is a process by which advisory occurs, how we consult them, and that process has occurred, is through the normal consultations of government departments that we have dealt with. But my sister and DG for DPME would be so much compromise if she were to get into this matter when council has that responsibility. But we have engaged with government departments, and I think the work that we are doing now with the planning apparatus and the planning tools serves to add into that. The financial statistics. Local government, and it was raised by Honorable Ndombele, local government, we release data on the capital expenditure as well as on all facets of local government, be it vacancy rates and everything. Whatever local government, whatever occurs in that space, and generally our financial statistics looks entirely in the whole area of government and its ability constitutionally to provide services to the citizenry. there is quite a substantive use of our data by local government and municipalities, and SALGA has particular passion. But we have to continuously take the information to them. It's not enough to think they will come and harvest the information from us. As regards, can government do something about the GDP? I want to link this matter to evidence-based policy formulation, but also the point that, Chair, you have always been saying about DPME, because consistently in quarterly reviews you have raised it that you want our colleagues from DPME to take certain responsibilities. What we do is, from a policy point of view, because as statisticians we can't dabble into policy. So what they do, and we are well placed with our colleagues, that they define the what, the policy space is theirs, it's not ours. We can't go into that, because why shouldn't we go into that? The moment we get into the policy space as statisticians, it means the day that the numbers do not suit what we have advised government, we will not be able to produce them, we will hide them, and we are not supposed to hide any number from the public. So they can actually define what the target may be, and that is already defined in the NDP. But when the how of measurement, they can be involved. So that remains to us. So that's as far as they can deal with the GDP. But as regards the inner workings of how we measure, they cannot be involved. Once they are involved, it means that we will have one element of the national system of statistics being government overbearing on the rights of the citizenry to this public good that they must access. The Kyoto Protocol falls within that matter, same organizing principle. When we meet with, we can meet with the Statistics USA or any other country, developing nation, we can meet with them only to discuss the methods, but to discuss what policy positions are, including the refusal or the intransigence by developed nations to agree or to concede to levels at the policy level, we can't. So the States Act allows us to do so, and we do from time to time engage other countries. But also at the United Nations Statistics Commission, we meet annually every year, beginning of the year. We meet, the United Nations Statistics Commission is one of the earliest commissions that was set up after the establishment of the United Nations in 1947. We meet regularly to review methods and share experiences and look at what could work a lot more better. But as a parting shot, Chair, I need to give this committee assurances that while we will always illuminate issues, Mulana was looking for his coin, so he went to the place where there was light. And they asked Mulana, why are you looking for your coin where there is light? Did you lose it there? And Mulana said, no, I didn't lose it there. But this is the only place where there is light. Our job is to continue illuminating the space. Whether we have solutions ourselves, as they say, or not, it doesn't matter. If we don't illuminate, it would be like driving a car without a dashboard. You would never know when your oil is getting depleted, when your petrol is getting depleted, or whether you are turning or you are not turning, you would never know. And that's what we do. And our placement with our colleagues in DPME allows us to do that. And we do it with so much independence. The independence part is always guaranteed. And the support that we get from the minister is always beyond what we would expect at all times. Let me thank you on that note, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I just wanted to, on the questions that I asked.
Honourable Kasim, I was going to also go to the DG to talk to your questions, because those ones are at space. Honourable DG, pertaining issues relating to SA only. Please, ma'am.
Honourable Chairperson, I'm quite glad that my my brother from another mother has tried to illustrate very clearly the relationship. And in fact, it is that. We share a father, but our mothers are different and therefore we're equal. And we stand apart simply because we're joined at the hip by that father. I will desist, Chairperson, from commenting on Steph's essay with respect to organizational matters and relate only to the matters of collaboration between us and them, and then deal with the question that was asked by Honorable Member Karim, which I will take from a different perspective, which is our overall role with respect to the mandate paper and the funding of various state institutions and our responsibility in that context. I will not address myself to the specifics of the state essay financial matters for the reason I've already indicated. The mandate paper we've developed, Chair, and I think it's quite important in its second year for the committee to note, has become quite an important instrument for determining priorities. The objective reality of this particular financial year quite clearly indicates an extremely fiscally constrained environment. And I think my colleague quite clearly indicated we are all being asked to do a lot more with a lot less. There are a number of initiatives we've taken as DPME to guide institutions around how they can manage some of these challenges that we all face. And in the mandate paper, we state very clearly and guide further criteria for limiting expenditure in the state apparatus, which would help various institutions to re-examine their budget and determine whether, in fact, they can find further savings in various areas. We've identified the areas of consultants and truly believe that as the state was still not getting value for money in the areas of consultants, even though National Treasury itself, our partner in this exercise, has had various iterations of attempting to cut down the goods and services budgets of state institutions, we still think we're not quite there. In fact, our recommendations would go as far as identifying and limiting consultant spend to particular areas so that if consultant spend are to pay for business that departments and institutions have employed people to do, we would rather discourage it. So the guidelines would more likely start indicating consultant spend for instance, capital projects, which invariably mean that government cannot employ engineers and those specialized skills for capital projects. But consultants for corporate business of departments, advice, restructuring, and all those things we believe would really start to discourage the use of consultants in those areas. In the area of capital spend, we are also looking specifically at trying to squeeze out more value for money in those environments so that the state can start to benefit and enjoy much more reasonable pricing by the private sector, which traditionally has always inflated its prices when it comes to the state. The example we use is that we all know, whether it's Parliament or all of us, the bottle of water that we have all drunk probably costs 30 rand when we know that it is purchased for 5. So those type of weak areas we are targeting for influence. So I think generally we would look at very specific areas and encourage institutions, SSA and others included, to just be a little, very rigorous about attacking those particular vulnerable areas where we can all try and achieve savings. I think, Chair, the issue about the legislative reform has already been dealt with, and again, we're joined at the hip. The minister will take it forward. We have very little to do with it. We've been consulted, but would also look at basically what its outcome possibly may be on our collaborative programs rather than to influence the process of legislation, as he quite clearly says that the Statistics Council has their primary responsibility. We do share the views that to say that our future work of collaboration is very important taking us forward. The data center that we will report on, which they have also indicated, is really supposed to be a major significant trajectory change for South Africa in the way in which we coordinate and jointly manage critical information in the state for the benefit of all the state. And the data center, from our perspective, just forms the nucleus of what really we intend to establish as a knowledge hub, which is centrally located in the presidency, which will benefit all levels of government and all state institutions. And one can envisage that not only is that, let's say, an important part of that, but we see not just the formal or informal statistics, but we see all state institutions that collect information having some obligation about surrendering the information and making it available for joint collective use by all parties involved. This is leading us to what we will explain in our presentation, Chair, the expanded function of planning that the department will be taking forward, which includes extensive work around collaboration with those entities to inform forecasting, modeling, analysis for planning purposes for the benefit of the country across all levels of government. And we'll talk to that, Chair, and that's one of the very exciting programs we will be taking forward with StatsSA. The very important element, Chair, is I hope we see the example of yesterday and today. Climate change is upon us, and the more we are unable to forecast about what this country will look like in the next 10 years, the more we'll be wasting resources with disasters happening which we couldn't forecast and couldn't determine, and lay ourselves as victims of the disastrous effects of climate change simply because we've not allowed ourselves to be ahead of the curve. A number of countries internationally have gone into predictive models which quite clearly tell them what those climatic changes and conditions are likely to be so that they can plan properly with their infrastructure investments and other type of economic investments in a way that allows them to avoid wasting resources and laying investments in the wrong geographical space. Chair, that would be my sense around the StatsSA issues, except also to add, I think, Chair, that would cover StatsSA. There are a number of other issues you've asked around NYDA. I can relate to that as we start our presentation. Thank you.
Thanks so much, DG. Honorable Kasim, I'm not too sure whether you've been covered. Because you know what, DG, we are very mindful that the department doesn't interfere, but in the absence of the minister, so when we refer to you is to say, kindly just relay the message to the minister that must assist, because in terms of also the current act, from where I'm seated, it's not quite clear, because we don't appoint the council, so as a parliamentarian, but in terms of the vote, and also even processing the amendment of the act, it comes here, hence we do have an interest, but also there should be somebody who cautiously sensitize the council that without overstepping our roles in different spaces to say there is some pressure from our side because there's time. When the new government changes, things tend to move slowly because the new administration tries to unfamiliarize itself. You like starting all over again, even explaining things that are in the report, but because I'm saying we're very mindful of that, but we're raising it in the absence of the minister. Honorable Kasim, are you okay? Because also we're very mindful that we don't want to give them the authority that they don't have. by law, but as one family within one roof, so to speak, the message can go to the relevant person as it were. But also from our side, legally, we need to check how do we then communicate, because I know also we had other councils that we need to communicate to, but we're not supposed to because they don't necessarily report to Parliament as it were.
To assist, because the Secretariat for Council is within State SA. What we will do is we will work within Secretariat. We know Council is sitting this Friday, so we will raise the matter with the Chairperson as well. But also, following this process, from our side, we will work on a memo that goes to the Minister, and the Statistician General should be able to take this matter with the Minister going forward. When we talk about independence, it doesn't mean that there's no administrative responsibility. The Minister has responsibility to administratively supervise the Statistician General, as well as he approves the work of statistics, a work program of Statistics South Africa. It's enshrined in law. So those things we can deal with. Thank you.
I'm happy that you have come back home. Thank you so much. Other than that, may I, on behalf of the committee, just take and thank you for the presentation and the good work. That end of this. Before you move yourself from here, probably you would like to you to respond as well. Over to you, sir.
No, I don't have any responses. I only have follow-up questions, Chair, actually, which was just to get... There were a few responses. The first one was around the integrated system in the presidency, together with the capacitation building program in local governments. If we can maybe get some more details about those programs, either through the committee secretary. I'm very interested in the program with local governments, and details as to when this program around the integrated system and more details around that as well. And the last thing around the budgetary issues. I picked up certain amounts that were given. I suppose what I was asking the Chair was not necessarily around what are going to be the contingent liabilities in the next financial year or where State SA might not be able to meet its commitments, but rather there are processes with regards to the adjustments budget and with regards to the new budgets that are going to take place. As to where we sit right now, what is, if it was up to State SA, how much money would they want? In order to make sure that they can meet their mandate as a State SA. It was more question, if there's an adjustments budget, how much is needed for this financial year? If there's a new budget, how much is needed for the next financial year? Just out of interest, what is State SA's current view with these issues and the issues that were raised today?
Kindly, just because in a previous engagement you did respond to this one, but I'll be listening whether there's accuracy in terms of your response. May you deal with that? I'm not too sure between your team. Okay. Over to you, ma'am.
Yes, this one. With regards to the adjustment estimate that we're putting was 245 million rand, which included the 36 million plus the 93 million rand over expenditure on the current compensation of employees, because remember, Saturday was eaten into the bone, into the vacancies with his, or into the posts with his warm bodies, including the sum total of that would then be the amount for the critical posts that we require to come back to State SA. For the following year, there's 180 million rand cut that has been done to us, which eats into the warm bodies again, and it does not cover any of the wage negotiations or the staff emoluments that needs to come, We have done a formal submission to our minister with regards to those outer years of 1819-1920. We need a rectification of this so that we can maintain the status quo of status 8. We are regressing at the expense of our current employees.
By the way, on behalf of the committee also, we have written a letter to the minister. So in terms of the portfolio committee, with that breakdown, we are very mindful. And also earlier on, in the opening remarks of the DG, she did talk to that. And hopefully, sometime next year, then we are not going to see anything happen in terms of the critical posts, as it were. Do you would like to say something, or are you okay?
I'm okay. With the capacitation for local government, we'll prepare a note that includes the kind of workshops that we are conducting with local government, and we'll send it to the committee secretariat. Thank you, Chair.
The protocol says that as a matter of principle that we ask questions, but we would also, we still expect written response because also, oh, I didn't say it this morning to us, this morning, actually we've got a dashboard as the portfolio committee in terms of also our decision tracking system. That would like all the time when you come on your quarterly report, we put it here, and then when you report, we talk to it, but also we send it to you upfront every time. Because the decisions of the committee are legally binding when they've gone through the house, then you'll be able then, we can hold you accountable to those ones. Okay, thank you so very much, and then that will come to the sister team. While you are walking, you know, I was just saying that SA talks about technology, but they still give us the papers. We did request that you don't miss copies because we would have sent, unless there are any changes in the slides and all that. But also, you can also, if there's time, within 24 hours, you send to. But I'm just saying generally, not specific to SA. No. Yes. That will help because the Parliament is investing on ICT.
Jake, can we not get a 5 minute body break?
Stretch break, yes. May we, according to my watch, Honorable Kasim, it will be at 17:20. 5 minutes, yes. No, we are almost done. Actually, we will be finishing early than in the city.
Thank you. results of our work is so
Maluleke.
Maluleke.
Yes.
Do you know his name?
Yes, Resenga. How do you spell it?
Resenga.
R-I-S-E-N-G-E. Maluleke. Do you want me to just talk about Maluleke?
Alright,
Maluleke. Didn't say Resenga for that. Maluleke. That's correct.
Thank you. What time do you think it's going to end?
It's going to be around 6, but it doesn't look like it's going to end. It may go beyond 6.
I will leave it. So let's get it. It's going to get dark.
That's
Singapore, not
NYD. NYD.
Oh.
Yeah, that island is Karim. Is Karim.
Yes.
This one is Wasim.
Oh.
It's just this one. Sorry, I had to Google for you.
Thank you very much.
So,
I can't see.
I know that he's somewhere in their website. So he's stuck there. We just move forward. You can see the picture.
Oh, that actually...
Him.
It is.
He's shaved, yes. He hasn't shaved.
Wow, okay.
Okay.
Thank
okay,
you.
Stop.
Honorable members and colleagues, may we start?
From BMZ.
Honourable members and colleagues, shall we resume? Over to you, DG.
Why are you sitting in the corner? How are you going to get into here?
Honourable Chairperson, honourable members of the Portfolio Committee, thank you very much for this opportunity for us to present to you the annual report of the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation. We come as a delegation from DPME and I'm accompanied by the Secretary of Planning, the DDG responsible for monitoring, outcome facilitator for education, CFO, head of HR, and office of the DG. We are here to present to you, Chairperson, the performance for 16-17 financial year, and in doing so, our presentation will be outlined as indicated. We've separated the presentation, Chairperson, into various categories for ease of reference to the information. And in our outline of the progress in respect of the financial year 16-17 on performance information, we have elected, Chairperson, to provide you with the information on the areas where targets have been partly achieved or not achieved. And then we've created a new section towards the end of the report, which are the highlights and achievement areas where the targets have either been exceeded or achieved fully. We can go very quickly through those, but even in the first part of the presentation, we give you a sense of the highlights of achievement for your benefit. So we will be spending most of our time dealing with the challenging areas, as the Chairperson has guided. I'm not certain, Chair, whether I should also address myself, and probably, if you allow, under Program 5, which is the Youth Development Program, if you allow that, we will touch on some of the issues you had already raised here in this meeting on the NYDA so that we can see it in the context of Program 5 as we write to the issue. Chair, for the record, we just outlined our purpose, our mandate, what our work entails, the various areas that we are responsible for, and the various programs so that by doing so, we just ensure that we all have a common understanding about the work of DPME. I will not emphasize that. I'm certain that members are fully familiar with that and the information that is before us will provide that.
DG, there has been a prior apology of SES-SA. They would like to be excused around about 6 o'clock. They've got a flight to take and we would like them to miss the flight. But they will stay until around about 6 o'clock, then they will excuse themselves. I'm sorry to do that. Okay.
Honourable Chairperson, if I may proceed, and thank you very much to our colleagues from SES-SA for their participation here today. The second slide, Chairperson, we deal with is the issue of the mandate, and this is only just to emphasize the legislative reform imperative we have, confirming basically that we've been established through the Constitution, Section 85, 2B, and that basically the mandate of DPME was also quite clearly articulated in 2004 in Proclamation 47. The reason we highlight this, Chairperson, is to remind the committee that this is the year during which we will be dealing very specifically with the issue of legislative review and the legislative mandate of the department, which will be stipulated in a proposed piece of legislation to serve in 2018 to deal with formally establishing the function of planning, monitoring, and evaluation.
the work of the DPME also covers the work of planning, including providing capacity and secretariat services to the NPC, conducting consultations with national departments around the institutionalization of planning, and new planning activity which was undertaken in the period under review. The monitoring function is guided by the MTSF and the 14 outcomes and other monitoring activities, including quality of management practices in national and government departments through MPACT, as well as service delivery facilities monitoring through unannounced and announced visits. The evaluation of research quite clearly indicates the work that we do around evaluation, which is very valued in government, and evaluate government policies and programs through evidence. And out of that, 59 evaluations have been completed. The DPME is also the champion of evaluating discipline across government, with 7 provincial evaluations now in place and 102 provincial evaluations that have been undertaken. With respect to youth development and empowerment, we championed the adoption of the youth policy in the 15-16 financial year, the monitoring of evaluation framework for youth development which has been drafted, and the Deputy Minister also serves importantly as a coordination for youth development as a presidential office. Chairperson, if you could just allow me 1 second of interruption. Can I just ask my if I continue, Chairperson, on part B of the performance information, we can confirm on part B that out of the 61 targets that we have set ourselves, we are able to achieve and exceed 52 of those targets, and we have partly achieved 6, and the targets which have not been achieved are 3. With respect to financial expenditure, we can confirm that 97.9% of our expenditure has been achieved, and we will then take you through the specific programs with respect to highlighting the challenging areas where targets have not been achieved. On program 1, Chairperson, we confirm 14 out of 16 targets met and fully achieved. The 2 that we didn't relate to the ICT business application, where we had procurement delays and capacity of service providers and overpricing related in some of the projects being cancelled. And a second area where the ministerial program executive support plan was conducted as part of the communications plan and not independently as a standalone program. Chairperson, we can confirm 100% achievement of valid invoices that were paid within 30 days, and would reflect later as well with respect to our support to other government departments with respect to payment of 30-day invoices. On program 2, on the next slide, we confirm that we have 19 targets that we had set ourselves. We exceeded 5, and the targets that were achieved were 10, and the targets that were partially achieved were 4. Of those 4, the 1 is the publication of development indicators due to new data, which had to be factored in, so that was delayed. The 3 others with respect to evaluation were delayed as a result of a report from the a report that was delayed because of postponement of meetings, and 1 improvement plan that was delayed due to lengthy consultations. In some of those cases as well, we had delays as a result of provincial authorities not approving the particular evaluation. On program 3, institutional performance monitoring, 2 targets were not achieved. We exceeded 4, we achieved 8, and those 2 that were not achieved were DG's performance agreements, which were not assessed within the 30 days of receipt. out of them, we can confirm now that they were then subsequently achieved within 2 months of the originally set 30 days. The second is the capacity development program for newly appointed DGs. This was set for a date in March and was not achieved because of the unavailability of directors general who were basically not available on that particular date and couldn't confirm their participation. On program four, 8 targets out of 9 were either achieved or exceeded. The annual report of the NPC, and that report was produced after the target date by the 21st of May instead of the 30th of April, and then 20 stakeholder engagement activities were undertaken in that particular period. On youth development, all the 3 targets were achieved as the NYDA quite clearly indicated. And Chairperson, I would just like to also indicate in response to some of the issues that had been raised around Program 5 and NYDA, is we are really quite pleased, Chair, as I think all of us are, around the performance of the NYDA, particularly their governance and importantly their governance performance and institutional performance. We would also support and encourage them to sustain the achievements of clean audit and 100% achievement. But we also recognize, Chairperson, that in this particular financial year of 2018-2019, it is DPME that has placed youth development and empowerment as the second priority with respect to the mandate paper. And when we did that, Chair, we were quite mindful of a number of programs that were located within government departments that impact on youth. And therefore, as the NYDA was trying to illustrate, the programs that they have currently enable them to participate and activate youth programs in society, in the non-governmental environment, with private sector partnerships, and with very many other stakeholders. Where we think we need to do a whole lot more is consolidation of the government program for youth internal to government, and this particular area, including NYS, but also enabling government departments on their own initiative to drive youth programs, complementing the work of the NDA. If you go to the detail around the mandate paper, you'll find we've identified a number of areas that government departments are now responsible for working together with NYDA to push youth programs together in areas such as business opportunity for youth, in youth access to internet programs, capacitation of youth enterprises. Government has also identified tourism and hospitality as 2 priority areas for the development of youth entrepreneurship, upscaling labor-intensive programs, internships, learnerships, and artisanships. And I think in those particular areas, we would like to see government departments providing support for youth empowerment and development programs. We also, Chair, would support the expansion and greater accessibility of the NYDA in rural areas and in most urban areas to actually enable young people to access them physically, but we also are quite encouraged by the innovation that comes with the app that would ensure that, in fact, even in the most remote areas, our young people are able to access our program. We will be collaborating, supporting, and working with NYDA very closely to ensure that their programs are successful in the areas such as the legislation, which is outstanding coming in the next financial year, but also in defining much more clearly the strategy and the development programs that come as a result of the higher priority and the expansion of the program of the youth. And Chairperson, I think we would come back at a later stage to deal with the details around what those direct implications of those government programs are on their plans. And we hope that, in fact, as we move forward with the APP, we're able to see those areas factored in and the collaboration with government departments strengthened. With respect to the governance part, which is part C of our presentation, we can confirm as DPME that we've had an independent and functional internal auditing unit, which has performed effectively and operationally efficiently and has evaluated all the controls against the high and major risk areas within the department. Both the audit committee and executive management are satisfied with the assurance provided by the internal audit. In the next page, we confirm and provide clarity around the specific responsibilities of our internal audit, but also confirm that largely due to their vigilance and a lot of work they have put into this, they've assisted the DPME to maintain a clean audit report by the Auditor General of South Africa, and this chair, as we confirmed earlier, is the fifth consecutive clean audit of the department. In the next set of information, we provide oversight statistics in the human resource area, and in there we just like to highlight the 10.3% vacancy rate that was achieved in the year under review, the percent of which SMS posts were 16.8%. In the next area, we deal with the issue of annual turnover rates by salary band, which gave you information indicating 16.7% of the turnover rate in the year under review. And then in the next table, we are able to provide you with the total number of employees in the various categories and confirm their racial composition in terms of the employment equity stats, and they confirm that we exceeded the disability target of 2.3% with respect to employees in the department. The next section deals with financial information, and in that financial information, Chair, 97.9% in terms of our financial performance, expenditure of our total budget. In the next one, we give you a breakdown of financial performance, and we provide you very clearly with what our key cost drivers are. And as you see, that green section of that pie chart is the 52% that is an allocation for transfers and subsidies, which includes the transfer to NYDA. The rest include compensation of employees, goods and services, and payments for financial assets. In the next slide, we show you the unspent versus the spent amounts with the various areas, with administration having some unspent money, but we give that with respect to each one of the programs in the total expenditure of the program. Financial performance, in the next one, we analyze for you the goods and services and the main cost drivers there. The National Income Dynamics Study, which is at 26%, and then travel and subsistence and other computers and consultancy services with respect to that expenditure program. The next table gives you the cost drivers in relation to other expenditure areas, and at the end of that column we're giving you information that shows the percentage spent, with most of the areas spending 100% of their allocated budget, with just the little exception of advertising and travel and subsistence. In the financial performance information, Chair, we've given what is the standard assessment of what has happened to the payments of 30 days with respect to the 100% achievement that we referred to. And then we've given you a summary of the accruals as well. And in the accruals, we've given you the actual amounts that are related there. And then we've also given you information related to future commitments, which would basically be where goods and services contracted but have actually not been received. In the next slide, which is the final one around financial performance, we talk to the issue of irregular expenditure. 3,000 rand where procurement process was not followed. We indicate that a warning, written warning has already been provided to the employee. And then 37,000 rand where failure to specify minimum local contents requirements, where in fact we're conducting an investigation to deal with that particular matter. In the areas of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 340,000 was our opening balance, 77,000 related to prior years, 276 related to the year under review, the 500 and 21,000 were the amounts that were resolved, and 5,000 which was recovered, giving us a closing balance of 164,000. In fruitless expenditure, as we indicate, The biggest cost driver are issues of changing of travel arrangements and damage to rented vehicles, and partly led by the amount of extensive travel that the department actually undertakes in various areas. But I think we would want to revisit our contractual arrangement so that we get a more favorable dispensation with respect to the cost implications of cancellation and change of flight arrangements. Chair, you had indicated that there were issues that were raised by the portfolio committee, and we have taken up those issues and have developed a list of strategic issues that were raised during the year under review, but also during this particular year. And we've highlighted those issues and attempt to give you a response to them in order for us to ensure you recognize we take the work of the committee seriously and we actually institutionalize it in our core business and ensure that we're able to programatize it and provide progress to the portfolio committees on matters that you raise. The first issue is the issue of legislation, and with respect to legislation, Chairperson, we are confirming that the development of a planning, monitoring and evaluation legislation has been done with the Chief State Law Advisor, and secondly, the next important task is the transfer of the SPRUMA function, where we're finalizing the arrangements with our sister department of rural development and COFTA in order to finalize those arrangements and allow the ministers to finalize the transfer of the SPRUMA function, which actually then establishes one of the core elements of the planning function in DPME. The second is the prioritized budget allocation for key government departments. We can confirm, Chairperson, that Cabinet on the 16th of August approved the mandate paper, which is a budget prioritization framework, and out of those, seven priorities were identified, which have been approved to guide the process of the budget in 2019 financial year. The third element is to work in collaboration with SETSA and strengthen the use of data and planning. We have increasingly been working with SETSA, as we've also reported to this committee during this meeting and a previous one, and our initiative around developing the data center as a first step to create a knowledge hub for long-term planning and forecasting, which is what I referred to earlier, is well underway and will give us very exciting information that we can guide planning in the country jointly. Supporting local government to improve service delivery to citizens, we have new initiatives that are currently being conceptualized, which will help us to deal with the issue of citizen-based monitoring. One of them is something called Mystery Citizen, which basically will roll out people who go into frontline services areas to test whether public servants in the main are delivering services appropriately to our people. We're just looking at the issues around the penalties and the direct implications where people are found not to be providing services within the context of the labor relations and legal framework so that we get that particular right. But also, those programs will help us to supplement the local government management improvement model that we already have in place. We'll also enhance the efficiency and the use of the presidential hotline and expand the citizen-based monitoring program in its entirety. Chairperson, the next issue that was raised with us was Operation Pakisa. We continue in this particular area as an intervention to advance the implementation of the NDP, to monitor progress in the implementation of the six Operation Pakisa delivery laboratories, which we've conducted today, and the impact and the outputs that have been implemented. A total today alone on the ocean economy Pakisa is a total of 24.5 billion investments that have been committed, 15.6 billion by government, 9.1 billion by the private sector, a total of 6,517 jobs that have been created, and DTI incentives of 428.8 million have been provided. We can provide detailed progress on the other Operation Pakisa areas, the other five, but we think we actually are seeing very significant results in all of them, with the oceans economy one being the most advanced. The strategic plans for 2014 to 2020 20 was reviewed, and this was reviewed together with the organizational structure, which provided an opportunity for the department to increase its capacity, particularly in the areas of planning, frontline monitoring, and corporate services. The current financial year is about filling of those vacancies, and we will highlight later, Chairperson, that in fact we've had some delays, significant delays, with respect to finalizing the organizational structure with the Department of Public Service and Administration, and we'll highlight what we've done with respect to that. The mainstreaming and prioritization of youth development, the review of the NYDA Act is underway, and we'll be hoping to finalize that with our colleagues, as we've already indicated. Compensation of employees, this is the issue, Chairperson, which resulted in the department being allocated an additional 94 posts in the financial year 2017-18. The delays that have been faced as a result of not finalizing the structure from DPSA side, there have been points of difference, and I think as a collective Chairperson in this family of this portfolio committee, it's important for us to be quite clear about our roles and responsibilities at the respective departments so that we don't step on each other's toes. These things come up when examples such as organizational structure are built in and they start identifying items and say, no, that's not your function actually, that's ours and you shouldn't be doing X. And so a lot of that alignment has been necessary, but it comes through very painful experiences such as restructuring that you're able to pick up and make concessions sometimes that in fact certain functions in DPME ended up there historically but actually are functionally DPSA, certain DPSA functions actually should be in DPME, and I think it will take us maybe another year or so to be quite clear about the separation of this. I understand also that DPSA is busy with an exercise about the macro organization of the state, which will look at all of us, the central departments, and see how our functions are sharpened and realigned so that we can all do our work without necessarily duplicating each other or even overlapping each other with respect to what it is that we do. This is the result of one of those areas. But we can indicate, Chair, that despite a delay in expenditure of the compensation of employees' budget with respect to this particular area, we've had to make adjustments to our budget in this particular area as a result in this financial year, but only in this financial year, not in financial year 18 and 19. To date, 11 posts have been advertised, that means just advertised, 19 are shortlisted, 7 posts are waiting interview, 2 posts are waiting references, 46 posts of those 94 have been filled, and 11 are already awaiting assumption of duty, which means they've got their letters and are serving notice in their various areas. So we're quite confident that out of the 94, that progress that we make, which is basically the 46 plus 11, is actually going to shut that gap. By the time we get to the end of the financial year, that money would be at expenditure rates, as we show at the bottom, where they actually should be. In the next section, Chairperson, I'll just be very quick, but just confirm that that's where we have the details of achievements with respect to the performance information around the target, and I would run very quickly through that, highlighting just a few of the areas for the benefit of the committee, but we'll be quite glad to take questions on this particular section. It's just, we also don't want to only speak about areas where we've had challenges. We'd like to leave you with very good thoughts about the good things that we've actually managed to achieve. The first area, Chair, without repeating, is we've exceeded the target which is indicated on the number of interns where we had set ourselves a target of 5%, but we actually achieved 9% of interns appointed by the department. In the next area, I'd like to highlight the workplace skills plan, where that was the target of 80% was achieved, and we're actually sitting at 131%. 100% of our SMS members disclose their financial interest via the e-disclosure system. The three-year rolling strategic internal audit plan was produced. The four quarterly audit implementation reports were produced for the audit committee. The next area is the summary report. I'd like to highlight the quarterly reports
that are submitted to Cabinet on the 14 outcomes, which are presented to Cabinet in September 2016, and the summary report for the implementation of the outcomes, which were presented to Cabinet Lekutla in February 2017. A concept document for the National Center was also developed, the data center that we so proudly speak about, and further work is to be done in this area. Two Operation Patisa interactive dashboard report for ocean economy and the ideal clinic labs were produced and published on the Operation Patisa website by the 31st of March. We also exceeded our target with respect to briefing notes to Cabinet, also exceeded our target on executive visits where we had set a target of 80% but actually achieved 88%, and the briefing notes on mining towns and labor sending areas, we also exceeded the target of 3 by producing 5. With respect to the local government management improvement area, we exceeded by producing 41 assessment scorecards for the 41 municipalities as set against a target of 25. And this, Chairperson, is one of the areas where we significantly partially underestimate what the demand is going to be. And when we open up a system, we find that there's great demand coming from provinces or local government, in this instance provinces, greater than we anticipated, and we end up exceeding targets. It just means in the future we would want to look at a better way of estimating that demand so that the excess is the gap between actually achieved and required by our client in this particular case is a much closer one. We can also indicate we exceeded the target of the socioeconomic impact assessment study, where we're set for 80%, we ended up at 99%, and 2 research assignments were completed in an area where we actually had set ourselves 2 assignments to achieve in the evaluations and research program. The others are the ones that I've already highlighted, which are shown there in red. When they are red, it means it's the problematic ones that we started with, and so we've been able to give you all of those. But the other issue to highlight is 153 of the 159 MPET assessments that were conducted by national and provincial government departments. We set ourselves a target of 95%. The target was also exceeded in the number of new frontline service delivery monitoring visits, where we set a target of 63 and we were at 89. The next area to highlight is the unscheduled monitoring intervention, where the target was exceeded at 34 when we had targeted 20. And then in citizen-based monitoring, we implemented 10 new facilities to support capacity building in service delivery departments. Chairperson, in Program 4, we can indicate that we exceeded the number of research projects. We did 5 under the NIDS Wave 4, where we had actually, with research projects we did 5, where we were set up for 3, and then in the income, in the NIDS Wave 4 project were produced by the end of the financial year as we actually had targeted. We conducted 6 consultations with respect to the institutionalization of planning and government, and we also, with respect to the second draft of APP for all national departments, concluded 44 assessment reports for national departments, where we set a target of 39 by the 31st of January 2017. And that basically would bring us to the end of Program 4 in the highlight areas, where we've exceeded our target. The final program then is Program 5, which we've already discussed extensively, which is the youth program, and out of the 3 targets set, I would like to confirm that all 3 were achieved. And as I say, in this particular program, we'll be looking at an expanded mandate that comes from this area being prioritized by government and allowing us to have possibly more areas for delivery in the future. Thank you very much, Chairperson. And on that note, I think we'll be able to take questions from the honorable members. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Tichi. Members, here is the year that was. tempted to start from my right, but this time my hand is tired, so let me stretch it this way. Over to you, Honorable Dobson. Okay. No, it's Honorable Mtau.
Thank you, Chair. Let's see. Couple of things. In the auditor's auditor general's report, they make reference to material misstatements. I'm not going to ambush you. I did ask the AG this question. So I'm going to ask you the same questions because these misstatements were subsequently corrected. Now, I asked the question, was it originally because of negligence that this kind of thing happened, or was it because of incompetence? Now, I won't tell you what they said, so you will respond to that. The other issue that is really worrisome to me is about the role of the National Planning Commission. Now we have a new commission and stuff like that, and everybody, including ourselves, are very keen on the National Development Plan, achieving its targets and moving this country forward economically. But as we know, most of those targets, it's lagging behind. Unemployment, GDP, all those kinds of things. My real bugbear is, what does the commission do? Because I have a sense that maybe they should be used also to get in there and do something really practical about implementation of the plan, so that we have an implementation plan rather than just having a 2030 vision kind of thing. Now, I see in the report that, of course, they had 20 engagements with stakeholders. Who are these stakeholders? What kind of engagement is this? Does it take? Because I just believe that we are sitting on a very good idea in terms of the National Development Plan, and we are not getting anywhere close to achieving those targets by 2030. Now, earlier on in your remarks, DG, you referred to consultants. Now, in the annual report, there's a huge reference to consultants on page 101, and they refer to, but there's an anomaly there. Because on that page, table 3.13.1, the table says, training needs identified for the period 1 April 2016 and 31 March 2017. And right below it, they tabulate, or you tabulate, because I presume you produce the report, you tabulate project time, you talk about the number of people who were involved, and these are really the consultants. So the heading does not really gel with the content. Anyway, that's, by the way, you can fix that. My point is, if you look at that table, it tells you all sorts of things about what consultants you are using and stuff like that. At the bottom of it, on the next page, at the end, it refers to an expenditure of 32 million rand. It talks about the number of days spent as 4,432, and I just did a quick calculation, that's about 12 years, and of course the consultants were 210. Now, some of the things that are the projects that are mentioned here in terms of the project title, for instance, it's just, they blow my mind, and I'm saying this because it confirms what you're saying about the use of consultants. And I wish you guys can have a look at that yourselves and see whether you need to use those people for the things you're doing. Absolutely. So that's the kind of thing that I think it gives you substance into what you were saying earlier on. We need to look at these things. Some of these things have got to be done by the people internally. Thank you, Chair.
Member Honorable Dan, do you want to say something, sir? Yeah, of course. Honorable Honorable Young Float.
Thank you, Chair. Under human resources, refer to the fact that you've got 119 employees, but only 49 of them qualified for performance bonuses or performance rewards. I would like you to elaborate on why so few of these people, because it is a fairly senior level of employee, and are you doing anything, and what are you doing to help these people improve their performances? And then secondly, and that's my last question, your mandate is to ensure the advancement of the NDP. What I would like to know is, what tool do you use to ensure that that you are achieving, or that departments are achieving the deliverables under the NDP? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable, yes, over to you, ma'am.
Chief, sorry, I just want to mention this morning, and I see on your slide 13, you also talk about the DG's performance agreement, and that only 39 of 111 were done on time, which is quite poor. No matter what the reasons were, but can you also tell us exactly what is the vacancy number of DGs in total? Because this whole thing of the DGs was supposed to be sometime approved by Cabinet, and it's still not. Now, I asked the Minister of DBSA this morning, and she sort of, you know, didn't really comment or gave me an answer, as you will recall, Chair. And we want to know, what is the exact delay of it being approved by Cabinet? Because, you know, I mean, we don't want to fight for people just to get increases and become fat cats. There's a job to be done. But if you're a DG, like anybody else, surely you should have a performance agreement, you should be evaluated, and you should get a bonus if you on merit deserve one. But what is exactly the delay on this whole issue in Cabinet? If Cabinet's delaying it, why are they delaying it? Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honourable Kasim? Honourable Ndombele?
Our resolution taken to required that the department provides us with a detailed report on the sustainability of the depressed mining communities, as it is one of the presidential projects. Would still like to have some more information on that, Chair. And also the presidential hotline, whether it provides us with the demographics. Thank you.